They're live.
Good morning and Happy New Year. This is the January 4th, 2011 meeting of the San Luis Obispo County Board of Supervisors. Would you please join me for the flag salute?
Ready? I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay. Madam Clerk, any changes to our agenda?
No changes to
our
agenda.
Oh, what a good beginning to the year. How exciting.
Good way to start, huh?
Yeah. Okay, we're going to go into consent then, and we will take...
You got one request.
One request. I think we have a few requests to speak on consent. So let's start going with that. On... A1, I believe, Mike Brown, and also Joe, I'm going to pronounce your name poorly, I think, Schreckerer, if you wouldn't mind coming to dueling. And then after that, Guy Savage on A12. Mr. Brown.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, Supervisors. Thank you very much. I'm Mike Brown, representing CoLab, speaking on the proposed graffiti ordinance. We think that having strict regulation and increasing responsibility for the graffiti problem is very important. And as law enforcement has told us, getting rid of the graffiti fast disincentivizes those who put it out there. So we understand that. We do think that we could improve the ordinance by adding a couple of things, and this goes to the issue of the private property owner who is actually the victim. So as you know, the proposed ordinance says that within 72 hours, a property owner, a tenant, and others unspecified could be required by the planning director to remove the graffiti. If they don't remove that graffiti, it could be done by the county. They could be billed for it involuntarily, although there is a provision for voluntary participation as well, and that if they don't ultimately pay it, that it could be a charge on their property tax, lien on their property. We think maybe that's overly broad, that it would be worthwhile to put a hitch in there which targets the scofflaws, the repeat violator, and tightens it up for them, but not necessarily the person who's receiving casual graffiti. You can imagine somebody who's away, who doesn't live here, who might be hard to contact, who would be victimized by being a victim in this case. One other idea, we did see you got the sheriff's graffiti van, which is great and everything, but in one jurisdiction I was in, the city did a contract with a nonprofit homeless agency, hired some homeless people, got free paint from various companies, painted stuff out both on government and private property, and turned out the homeless who were working on this took a proprietary interest in it, didn't like to see their good work re-vandalized, and became actual watchdogs of the taggers. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Brown. Mr., you're going to...
Schreckerer.
Thank
yes,
you.
Yes, I'm Joe Schreckerer. I live in Oceano. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. How refreshing it was for me to see the article in yesterday's Tribune, County Looks to Clean Up Graffiti Issue. Spokesman stated that it's an effort to be proactive. If you wait until you got overrun, it's too late. So I really appreciate that. But that's not why I'm really here today. I'm here because should it be thumbs up or thumbs down for how the county handled the managed the flooding issue in Oceano. There seems to be a discrepancy on what the residents have observed and responses from both the county officials and spokespersons from the sanitation district. The county spokesperson stated that aside from clearing mud from the surrounding flood flaps and on the inward side of the levee, everything went fine. It was also stated to the effect that that's what people living in this area should expect, that they can't be forced to move or raise their houses up. Could this be thumbs up, thumbs down, I'll leave that up to you for that statement. The sanitation spokesperson stated that although some of the lines leading to the plant were clogged, everything functioned properly. Those were statements. It was later stated that approximately 55,000 gallons of raw sewage had spilled into the neighborhood. Did everything go fine? Could the mud and silt have been cleared days or weeks before the heavy rain to give the lagoon a chance to flow properly into the ocean? Could the flaps have been adjusted to allow them to open wider? Was this really a high tide and Arroyo Grande Creek flow issue, as was claimed? There were low tides throughout that period that would have allowed the flaps to be forced to open wider by water flowing from the lagoon. As far as the sanitation plant issue, engineers from the plant now say there were multiple pump failures that resulted in up to 1 million gallons, not the 55,000, of raw sewage flowing into the streets and into the houses. Quite a discrepancy there. To resolve discrepancies and misunderstandings, it would be beneficial to see a timeline on what was done by the county leading up to and after the flooding occurred. Let's clear up the nature and volume of the sewer spillage. I encourage you here to be proactive in ensuring the residences of Oceano that the county holds up to your part of the bargain. Homeowners pay property taxes, and we pay additional special assessment taxes in our area to protect us against the levy. That's our part of the bargain. We fulfill it. More effort is needed to avoid future flooding. Silt buildup and overgrowth of reeds in the entire lagoon will eventually stop any flow of water going into the ocean. It's
Sir,
a matter of time.
Thank you.
Don't I have 3 minutes?
Your 3 minutes are up.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Guy Savage on A12, please. And that's what I have on consent. And okay.
Happy New Year, Board. Guy Savage with Information Technology. Just here to correct a typographical error on your agenda, item A12. It should read request to approve amendment number one. The staff report and transmittal are correct. It says number two. So
thank you.
Amendment number one. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Savage. And that's correct. Mr. Margetson, A5. And that's what I have for consent.
Richard Margetson, A5, the reappointment for the umpteenth number of times of Pandora Nash Carner to the Parks Commission for District 2. I'm wondering when, at some point, somebody in the district is going to question why, now this is going on over 20 years, the same park commissioner is being appointed out of Los Osos. If I were Cambria, I'd be questioning why nobody over this last two decades has been appointed from that area of the district. Is this person so overqualified or provided so many political favors that she's just not able to be replaced? This is also the person, I'm going to bring this up every time this appointment comes up, this is also the person that within hours of the recall election in Los Osos contacted the Regional Water Quality Control Board and asked them to fine her community out of existence. We have those emails. So I guess in District 2, you're rewarded for bad behavior.
And I have one more comment, and I'm going to close public comment on consent from Gwen Taylor, A5 as well.
I apologize for it being so late. I was under the impression you were under public comment. I, too, am very concerned about the appointment of Ms. Carner. She has been appointed by 7 members of different boards of supervisors. Unfortunately, having repetitive persons on a board does not make that person knowledgeable. We need a fresh face. We need new ideas. And the people of the district 2, are entitled to having new people on boards. Having someone on the civil service board for 4, 5, or 6 terms is inappropriate. Having a person on the planning commission for 7 terms or 6 terms or 3 terms is inappropriate. We need new faces. We need the diverse ideas. And it is important for the District 2 that this not be completed on the Parks Commission recommendation for a person to sit on it. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Taylor. Closing it to public comment on the consent, and I would go to my colleagues for anything to be comment on or pulled. Mr. Meacham.
A1, 3, 17, and 20.
Okay. Mr. Teixeira, any?
Yes, 14.
Mr. Patterson.
Item A2.
And Mr. Gibson.
Mr. Chairman, I have comments on A1 as well. I'd like to comment on our appointments to various boards and commissions in on the whole, A3 through 8, and A10. I have a question.
Okay, let's start with you then, Mr. Gibson.
Thank you. We'll go with A1. I think this introduction to this graffiti ordinance is fundamentally important. And did note the ultimate responsibility of the property owner for the cost of removing the graffiti. I think that's something that has to occur in the end, although I think that working cooperatively with the Sheriff's Department, we can probably minimize the economic impact. But I think in the end, in order to solve this problem, which is at the root of many other issues, that we need the participation of the property owners. What I did want to ask, and I see our sheriff here now, is I would assume that there's a criminal side of vandalism ordinance that would require restitution if someone is prosecuted. And I wonder if you could talk to that. Something that is common? Is that a means by which we can actually get reimbursement to a property owner? And I also see our code enforcement is here as well.
Mr. Trinidad, would you like to address this?
I'll support him if he needs it.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Gibson. Art Trinidad, County Code Enforcement, Department of Planning and Building. Yes, there is a provision in the ordinance that calls for restitution. It also provides for parental restitution if the perpetrator is found to be a juvenile. So the restitution not only goes to the victim, but it also calls for community service. Interestingly enough, in the ordinance, it also has a provision that the parent or parental guardian has to partake of that community service.
And is that in the ordinance being introduced, or is that in the criminal side of vandalism ordinance?
No, it's in the ordinance that's introduced.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Meacham? Same item?
Yeah, same item. I guess the difficulty that I have with this is that I understand the intent, but I think there's some misperceptions out in the public about what this intent is. And I think the very first part of this, on A1-3, when it talks about the analysis, we already have parental civil liability, restitution to victims, expanded authority for sheriff to reward a person who provides credible information, 72-hour removal time, and community service requirements and penalties. What else do we need? Why do we need to put an ordinance like this in place that... It appears on the surface that it really, I know we're trying to help the victims of this. It appears as the victims could be incorporated into the penalties of these things.
Right. Taken viscerally, I mean, you could take a look at it and say, look, here's the county going after a victim and potentially victimizing a person twice. That is clearly not the intent that we had in mind, although I understand your concern. It's a concern that I heard this morning on the radio and concern that I see in comments on the Tribune website. The county has no intent to victimize the person of vandalism twice. The purpose is to prevent people from maintaining graffiti.
But, Art, what's the difference between what we have and what's being proposed? I mean, it seems like we're well covered with what we have.
Under simple vandalism? Actually, what this does is it points specifically to graffiti as opposed to general vandalism, going out and breaking things or destroying things. Graffiti is specific because actually it relates to gangs and gang activity. So in conjunction with what the anti-gang coordinating council would like is to focus this particular type of vandalism, which is graffiti, to the exact problem which it is, which is to identify taggers and deal with them that way.
We gave, I know we met yesterday with Mr. Giffen, and we want to make sure that, I think this could be worded better, and I think it could be positioned much better by, rather than at the very onset talking about the agreements that could be entered into and the removal of graffiti by and the penalties that are applied to that, I think the intent of this and the purpose of this could be much better to be defined, because it's raising a lot of concerns, and it has concerns with me. So I think we have enough in place to be able to attack this, and I want to make sure that the public realizes we're not trying to victimize anybody. It's those that are creating this problem.
Yes, Ms. Meacham. In the staff report, I do mention that. If you'd like a little bit of a preamble to the ordinance, I could certainly draft some language for the hearing.
Well, I mean, if we get into all of the different things about on the graffiti abatement on the ordinance itself, all the things that we're going to do to people as opposed to how we're trying to protect the property owner. So, I don't mind if it's just, I'd like to see this when we get to discussion of this on the 25th, I guess is when it's scheduled. We'll have ample opportunity to be able to talk to folks putting this ordinance together, because I'm not comfortable with this ordinance the way it's written.
Okay. Mr. Gibson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Let me just see if I could clarify. Mr. Meacham was, I thought, suggesting that the five bullet points on A3 were in place now, but the way I read it is that this ordinance is what puts those five things in.
That is correct.
So they're not.
So we have absolutely nothing right
on,
now
on graffiti.
What we have right now is just simple vandalism under the penal code.
Okay.
So that's what's currently being enforced by law enforcement, Sheriff's Department. What this ordinance does is it allows code enforcement to also
to incorporate these five bullet points.
Correct.
All right. Thank you.
See if I have staff light on. I see Mr. Grant and Mr. Jensen wants to weigh in real quick.
Okay. Jim Grant, County Administrator. The intent today is to introduce this hearing, so pulling it probably wouldn't be the best thing. What it is introduction, so that the public and the board have time to look at this and then discuss it at the hearing date on January 25th.
Okay. Mr. Jensen?
Warren Jensen, County Council. I just wanted to point out that although there is an existing penal code vandalism provision, there's no provision for very quick response or removal. That would be added by this ordinance.
And if I may, Mr. Chairman, thank you. If there's a way to really emphasize the fact that if graffiti is displayed anywhere, the property owner has the ability to contact the Sheriff's Department or contact code enforcement to get assistance with that removal. I think the way that it's worded right now and the perception is that if there's graffiti out there and you don't remove it, we're going to fine you. And so we need to, I think, be a little more clear with how we're approaching this.
I wonder if code enforcement in the time between now and the hearing might prepare a little informational packet, a handout that might address those things very nicely.
Certainly.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Trinidad. Okay, we'll get some more information before that comes back to us on the 25th. Let's move on to other consent items. Mr. Meacham, I'm sorry, I forgot which ones that
A3
you had.
And
A3.
I'd like to pull A3. There's a question on a possible conflict on this one, so we'll just pull this for
now.
I had item A2.
Oh, I'm sorry. A2, Mr. Patterson.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a comment. This is setting out bid proposals for the Creston Fire Station. It's been a long time coming. We need a new fire station out in the eastern central part of the County, and I just wanted to thank General Services and County Council and the community of Creston, plus Cal Fire, County Fire, for working the past year and a half to 2 years to find a proper location and acquire the property and move forward with the bidding process for the actual construction that hopefully will begin in the spring.
Thank you. Mr. Gibson, I believe you want to comment on A5 and other.
Thank you. Actually, all the appointments. I just wanted to observe that items A3 through A8 are appointments of citizens to various boards and commissions that are fundamentally important to the operation of good governance in this county. I wanted to thank them for volunteering to devote part of their life to these things. For the most part, they serve as volunteers, and we're very grateful for their help. I will only comment briefly. We had public comment on the reappointment of Ms. Nash-Carner to the Parks and Recreation Commission. Over many years now, numbering about 20, Ms. Nash-Carner has given outstanding service to this county on the matter of parks, and I'm disappointed in our commenters mixing their personal animosity over events of many years ago with the reappointment of a fine citizen who's working hard to make this a better county. Thank you.
Thank you. Supervisor Teixeira on A14.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Item A14 on the purchase of new sheriff vehicles. I know that we need these, and I have no problem with that. My concern is that we're buying a vehicle that is being obsoleted by Ford. What are we doing to replace these? When and where they come up? And are we going to be paying more money and or getting in a problem with a vehicle that's obsolete?
Okay. I think we have Mr. Grant, do we have someone that might be able to speak to this?
Yes, we have the fleet manager.
Okay.
Is here to address this issue.
Great. Welcome. Thank you.
Rocky Bowie, Fleet Manager, County San Luis Obispo. Ford announced about a year ago they were going to be discontinuing the production of the Crown Victoria. The reason for the discontinuance is because it failed to meet the new regulations for side and top impact. The Crown Victoria is the staple of the law enforcement patrol vehicles nationwide and has been for many, many years. Ford, General Motors, and Dodge are all working very hard to come up with a replacement vehicle to take its place. And we're currently working with the Sheriff's Department to identify what that replacement vehicle will be. Meanwhile, we have an ordering gap. Ford's going to stop taking orders for the vehicle on March 1st, and production will stop as soon as they get done with that run. Chevrolet, Dodge, Ford, no one else has a vehicle that we can order today and take possession of starting at the beginning of the fiscal year to replace our vehicles that are scheduled for replacement. And next year, we have 16 of them. So we will have a gap of probably as much as about 6 months. We're looking for 8 months' worth of supply of vehicles to get on order now so that we don't run out of them. The additional time is for whenever we do select, whether it be the Chevrolet Caprice, the Ford Taurus police pursuit vehicle, their Tahoe pursuit vehicle, and there's also an Explorer pursuit vehicle. Whatever is selected, we're going to need time to upfit the vehicles because each one of them has unique consoles and barriers for the officer's protection. Does that answer your question, sir?
Yeah. My concern is the fact that Ford's made the note that they're going to be doing away with these, and there's other manufacturers and other jurisdictions and law enforcement that have already made the change. Shouldn't we be kind of upscaling and getting ready for the change sooner than buying a vehicle that's going to be obsoleted?
Well, in dealing with the Sheriff's Department and what we have to do with right now, with the ordering gap and the ability to take possession of them, as we analyze the replacements, we need to essentially buy some time. We need to have a right. good, reliable patrol vehicle while we make this assessment.
Okay.
And so what we're essentially doing is asking for 6 months to do that, of which a majority of the period of time we couldn't get a replacement other than the Dodge Charger. And the Dodge Charger is one of the vehicles being considered, but it certainly isn't the one that we've selected. Nor do we want to make an interim change and end up with three different types of pursuit vehicles in our inventory that just is makes it more difficult to maintain and ensure the reliability of the vehicles.
Very good. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. How long do these cars usually last?
They're put into service for a 36-month, 100,000-mile life expectancy.
Right.
And that's based off of resale value, repair cost, and officer safety, public safety.
Okay. Any further questions?
Thank you very much.
You're welcome, sir.
Thank you. Okay, my colleagues are deliberately confusing me, so we're going back to A10. First day as chair, they decided to pull comment on every consent item that there is, and then before I was even able to write it down. So, Mr. Gibson, A10.
In a random order, Mr. Chairman, you're a fine man of letters. This quantitative stuff, I realize, is somewhat challenging. This is the Lopez Lake sewer management plan, and I wonder if I see various representatives of parks here. On page 46 of that staff report, among other places, there's a capital improvement project list for that sewer system. In a number of places, it's noted that different lift stations, collection lines and the other are, identified as going to need replacement at some point. This is listed as Appendix C as a CIP list and plan and budget, but the only thing I don't see there is a timeline, and I was curious if Parks had an idea of over what period of time this needs to be accomplished. As we've seen in recent events, any sewer system needs constant attention and maintenance, and I think it's important that we have a clear sense of how we're getting on top of these things.
Right. Curtis Black, Deputy Director of County Parks. This list is extensive. It actually includes some items that are more operational in a position than in capital. And staff is already working with FRM to determine priorities. A certain number of these should be done right away. And some of them are as simple as doing a video of a pipeline and making sure that it is going to be useful and doesn't need to necessarily be removed or replaced. As far as funding goes, we do have funding that we do in addition to their general maintenance that goes month to month. We do some additional projects every year in the operating plan. Quite honestly, funding, as you'll see in a further along in the agenda today, funding for county parks is very difficult. We are seeking projects that will generate some revenue. One of the enhancement projects for the Lopez sewer system would help us to upgrade some of the campsites eventually. And so as we do some maintenance, some upgrades, we're also looking to provide some services that will be in addition, create some new revenue sources. So we don't have an exact timeline until we get these priorities together and we get some dollar figures per year.
Okay. At a point when you're back before the board, I wonder if you might just when you've worked out the timeline, just inform us. That would be helpful.
Certainly can. Now, this report is required by the state, and it's this listing of the projects is one of the key important parts of the plan. It really helps us to get move forward.
Very good. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Okay. Supervisor Meacham, A17.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just curious on this contract. Is this an increase in the contract amount? Over the previous years,
we have somebody from
Karen. This is Karen Baylor.
Mental health is Karen. Dr. Baylor.
Dr. Here. Baylor,
would you mind?
Hi, I'm Karen Baylor, behavior health director, and I just walked in. And I think you're asking about Dr. Ortiz's contract?
Yes, ma'am.
I don't believe it's an increase. I think it's the same amount that we've been using. She is under the Mental Health Services Act and runs the Latino Outreach Program.
But I guess the question that generated that question was basically the renewal process for the contract was unusually delayed due to contract negotiations and program evaluation. So I'm wondering, That generated the concern that the contract has been increased.
No, there were some technical issues with the contract. It had nothing to do with the money.
Thank you. And then the same thing applies to the item number 20 on that contract. Is that an increase in that contract?
No, as well? It is not.
Okay, thank you, ma'am.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Dr. Baylor. No further questions from the board. We are pulling A3, and I'm looking for a motion to approve consent agenda with the pulling of A3.
And we were going to also amend the agenda for the A12 that Mr. Savage spoke.
Oh, that's thank you. And also with the amendment of, as Mr. Savage pointed out, on A12.
I'll move consent with the pulling of A3 and the amendment on A12.
I'll second.
Moved by Supervisor Meacham, seconded by Supervisor Patterson. Roll call, please, Madam Clerk.
Mr. Meacham.
Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Patterson.
Yes.
Mr. Gibson.
Yes.
Mr. Teixeira.
Yes.
Mr. Hill.
Yes. Okay, thank you. We're moving on to public comment, and I have many a slip, and let's get them all in if you are going to comment. Wanted to say a few things. Are we ready to
A3?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Do we need to act on that separately?
We pulled it.
We pulled it.
Completely.
Just completely.
It's withdrawn.
Okay, I thought.
Okay. They're going to test me today, folks. I wanted to say a few things about public comment before we get in. We have many slips. The one change in the board agenda this year is that we're going to go back to the tradition of only having morning public comment. There won't be afternoon public comment. Also, I am going to ask that in our public comment, not just in the general public comment, but also in public comment on hearing items, that people will be civil and courteous and also focus on the business at hand. And in general public comment, that means basically business that has to do with the county as opposed to, say, foreign policy or things such as that that we have no purview. Also, some of the things that we've seen in some public comments on hearings and such, and also in general public comment, personal attacks, threats, slanderous rants, yelling from the audience. I'm not going to tolerate that kind of boorish behavior. You will be asked to leave if you display it. I believe it's our duty to help bring about better public values, and I think that civility and reasonableness are among them. We can disagree about a lot of things, but we will do so civilly and reasonably, or you will be asked to leave. And that's, I wanted to make that clear. So with that said, we're going to start a rather robust session of public comment, starting with Judy Vick and followed by Rachel Tamagni.
Good morning. My name is Judy Vick, and I'm here to talk to you this morning about PG&E smart meters. The New York Times reports that opposition to smart meters is sweeping the nation. And Bloomberg Business Week states Duke Energy's proposal to install 800,000 such meters in Indiana was rejected by regulators because the cost of the project would outweigh potential benefits to consumers. Here in California, 23 cities, including Morro Bay, and three counties have formally opposed the meters. Residents for Bakersfield filed a class action lawsuit against PG&E for huge billing increases with smart meters. In a recent regulatory filing, the Consumer Federation of California addressed security concerns with smart meters, attacking the position of investor-owned utilities seeking to avoid regulatory liability for abuses of private consumer data taken from smart meters by non-utility third parties. PG&E has admitted that smart meters interfere with arc fault interrupters, which are designed to protect against fires, and fires have been reported. Homeowners have organized against the health risks of radio frequency radiation emitted by smart meters. Cindy Sage, the co-editor of the Bioinitiative Report, states that the World Health Organization does not give an assurance of safety for current RF radiation exposure limits that are set by the Federal Communications Commission. Rather, the World Health Organization is in the process of deciding if RF is a carcinogen or a neurotoxin, and their report is not due until next year. Prudent avoidance of electromagnetic radiation has been adopted in Australia, Sweden, and several U.S. states, including here in California, Colorado, Hawaii, New York, Ohio, Texas, and Wisconsin. Recently, California Senator Dean Flores, the majority Democratic leader in the Senate, demanded a halt to smart meter installations, stating that people think that these meters are fraud meters. They're getting no benefit from these things. On November 18th, the California Public Utilities Commission Division of Ratepayer Advocates called for an investigation into the alleged public health risks of PG&E smart meters. The very next day, the CPUC announced its investigation into these consumer complaints. On December 6th, Assemblyman Jared Huffman introduced Assembly Bill 37, which requires the CPUC to allow customers an opt-out of the wireless smart meter and to provide for a wired alternative that offers the same proposed benefits. Alternative systems do exist, which are wired, making them more safe and secure. Cities such as Chattanooga, Tennessee, are using them. For the reasons I've stated, I urge you today to do as many other communities in California have done and elsewhere, enact a temporary ordinance to halt the installation of smart meters, the wireless smart meters, until AB 37 has been enacted into law, giving us a wired alternative. I do want to mention that I forwarded you the actual ordinances from many other communities for you to take a look at.
We did get them. Thank you, Mrs.
Thank you very much.
Rachel Tamagni, and if Mike Brown will be ready at the next lectern.
Rachel Tamagni, resident of Paso Robles. Mr. Chair, supervisors, in December of 2009, my husband, Chip, and I attended Greenway University in Los Angeles. They provided a two-day program to educate interested parties into the guidelines for the security and non-diversion of marijuana grown for medical use. Opening and operating a dispensary, a delivery service, and the formation of co-ops and collectives. We became a California mutual benefit nonprofit corporation in January of 2010. We subsequently obtained our BOE seller's permit and EIN. We were already operating a holistic health care service and were licensed by the city of Paso Robles to conduct business. We have made tax payments in a timely manner. We believe we did everything in compliance with the law. We were extremely careful in keeping records that could easily be made available to law enforcement if needed. We maintained a separate bank account at a separate bank from our personal and other business accounts, recorded all deposits and expenditures, as well as maintained a separate mileage log for any trips associated with our collective. These records and documents were readily available in a business file at our front door. On December 28, 2010, at 7 a.m., we were raided by a SWAT team consisting of several officers from many different law enforcement agencies. Our requests to see a search warrant were denied. We were told that we provided marijuana to an undercover officer who had a medical marijuana card. 2.5 hours later, we were told we would be arrested and were going to jail. Upon advising an officer that we were compliant with the law according to the Attorney General's guidelines, one of the arresting officers told us, and I quote, "What the Attorney General says doesn't mean shit." We are astounded and confused at how a situation like this could have occurred when we did everything in our power to comply, and to the best of our knowledge and education, did in fact comply with Proposition 215, Health and Safety Code 1136.5 and SB 240. We now face felony charges. With our mug shots and names displayed in the local news, this has been extremely humiliating and stressful for us. We understand that many others were arrested in this county who, just like us, believed they were in total compliance with the law. We still believe that we have violated no law. We would like some kind of explanation. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. And before I go to the next commenter, if I could please, while I understand a lot of these issues are rather passionate for people, and sometimes personally so, if you could refrain from any profane language. We are broadcasting this both live on the radio and on television. We would occur that. Mr. Brown, followed by Larry Bross.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, board members. I just wanted to take a minute to introduce myself. Mike Brown again. I am the Director of Governmental Affairs for CoLab. Be working very closely in San Luis Obispo County, looking at a variety of issues that affect our membership, including finances, various regulatory matters, and others, many of which, as you know, are interrelated. Wanted to say that I take this as a very positive opportunity look at it as a consultative approach with you all and others. I have 42 years experience as a local government professional, having served, among other places, as city manager of Tucson, city manager of Berkeley, 14 years as county executive officer of Santa Barbara County, have heavy experience in finance, project management, budget, performance measurement, a variety of regulatory matters, including the whole gamut of land use, and would welcome the opportunity to work on anything that you have in mind. You might even look at us as a available consultant if you have projects and things that are within the scope. You've got a new resource. I have a little office in San Luis Obispo here to work out of, does have access to a conference room, so anything you need, just give me a call. And by the way, I want to extend this to all the professional staff here. I am still a member of the International City County Management Association. I served as the chair of its Center for Performance Management for almost two decades. So anything you need, and I'll be calling you to say hi and get your cut on things. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Brown. Larry Bross, followed by Bill Bookout. Good morning, Mr. Bross.
Good morning. Good morning, Chairman Hill, and members of the board, and especially Mr. Teixeira, who I've never met. I am a resident of your district, Mr. Teixeira. I'm a 50-year, close to 50-year owner of property on the Strand after retiring from teaching. I've been here now for 20 years. I've been over 20 years retired. I'm here to talk about the flood, and I'm also here to correct some of the reports that you received, because I did watch the last meeting on television, and a report from your engineer that talked about some bar that was holding back the Arroyo Grande Creek. Now, wait a minute. There was no bar. I was there. And by the way, I've also spoken to Mr. Wallace, and he agreed that he wasn't there and that I was there. You know, every morning I walk down to the mouth of the Arroyo Grande Creek, and you know it's the confluence of three creeks. Meadow Creek, which runs down Highway 1, runs into the Arroyo Grande under the levee, and we have a gate there with two hand cranks. And I was there on the Sunday at 11 when the rain had stopped. It's usually our way of dealing with this is calling up the county. We speak to Mr. Dean, we usually, especially when the water comes up around the grate on Lakeside, we're concerned about this. But it was Sunday, and the holiday. I don't know who spoke to the county. I got down there at 11 o'clock. The Arroyo Grande Creek was running beautifully. It was Meadow Creek, and the gates were not up. Now, in 1982, when the big storm was there, I was out there at that time, too. That was when the Pismo Pier went down, and we raised the gates. Even though the creek might be an inch or two higher, you can hand raise those gates and at least try to let the water out. Nothing like that was done. There was no bar. I spoke to Mr. Wallace. He agreed that he was not there. There was no bar holding back the Arroyo Grande Creek. There were gates that were holding back Meadow Creek that could have been lifted up. And we collected some money from the state to improve that levee because of what the OHV does down there. I didn't see anything done about improving the gates. I don't know what was done with the money. Now, come on, we've got to get it together and get the system straight. That system does not work in this kind of a flood, and that's exactly when we need the system. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Ross. Mr. Bookout, followed by Dana Holland.
Good morning. Bill Bookout, 1565 Fountain Avenue. I was once the owner of Oceano Nursery. Many of you are familiar with my flooding problems of Oceano Nursery. I would like to thank each and every one of you for the abatement of State Highway 1 this summer. When Caltrans County OCSD came out and abated the drainage inlet, replaced a sewer line, cut down trees, widened the drainage channel, which alleviated the flooding of my business property, Oceano Nursery. It can be abated. It has been proven this summer. Thank you for that. The west side of Oceano is our problem that I'm here to talk about, but I do have a few other issues with State Highway 1. Yesterday, I sent out emails to Mr. Hill and Mr. Mitchum, and I hope that those will be shared with the other supervisors. The County of San Luis Obispo withheld in my trial exhibit number 579. And exhibit number 579 is all the residents west of Oceano complaints about flooding in 2001 in the lagoon area on Fountain Avenue. This was withheld from trial. It's a prejudicial error. Judge Tangeman did not feel that it was a prejudicial error to withhold evidence from inverse condemnation trial, but he allowed it to be withheld. There's now California case law, Bookout versus State of California, allowing evidence to be withheld and allowing the OCSD stormwater drainage inlet pipe in the system. I would hope that you would read this email. I've set up several websites. One is CaliforniaGovernorJerryBrown.com. One is GovernorJerryBrown.net. On those websites, you will find the documents that the County of San Luis Obispo trying to make a deal with the my attorney in 2006, which was Scott Radovich, trying to make a deal to let the county off the hook. These documents are on there. You'll see it written to the insurance carrier. I'm presenting these to you. You'll see that the flooding of State Highway 1 at that time could have been abated for $43,295, as seen in county documents. On my website, you're going to see videos of Caltrans at a 2005 OCSD meeting stating that if they fix this flooding problem, they're going to have to go from State Highway 1 to the Pacific Ocean. I'm providing the questionnaires of the 2002 that the county redacted, and they finally gave them to us on December 2nd. These are to you. I also have a letter from Senator Sam Blakesley and all the documents that were presented at trial to Judge Tangeman. Let's get together. Let's fix the flooding from State Highway 1 to the Pacific Ocean. Let's get Caltrans to take responsibility. $2.2 million at this OCSD meeting. They say that they can fix this. Let's all do it together.
Thank you, Mr. Bookout. And if I could, this is a good opportunity to remind people that when they do come and display any documents, you do need to have copies for our clerk for the public record. So
thank you.
Appreciate
you can find them on the Internet.
Thank you. Dana Holland, followed by Linda Hill.
Good morning. My name is Dana Holland. I'm a lifelong resident of Atascadero. Pardon me for minimum eye contact. I am visually impaired. I'm here today in support of ASA, Americans for Safe Access for Medical Marijuana. I am a four-year, I have held a prescription for medical marijuana for 4 years now. And in the beginning, I did go to Morro Bay. It was a short drive from Atascadero. There was no services in Atascadero. Morro Bay was shut down. So then I had to proceed to Goleta with my girlfriend, who is not a medical marijuana user, but she is in support of it for me. For the disabled who do not drive and who cannot get about through transportation, with transportation, they have to rely on others to get them to and from their medical appointments, to and from their prescriptions, just as you would down to Rite Aid or what have you. The only difference is our next facility is Goleta. That's 100 miles round trip. I mean, 200 miles round trip almost. And there is a very unsafe act of having to put ourselves and our drivers out on the road to receive our medicine. The other safe access issue is if we do not have deliveries in San Luis Obispo County, then my driver is no longer willing to take me, or the cost is too great, I don't think I would revert to the back alley, but I know that if I did have to go there, that there would also be other drugs involved. I just want safe access to medical marijuana. And I think we can all agree that there are benefits, and I think that we all know that it can be abused, as anything can be. But the benefits, I believe, outweigh the negative condemnation about it. But I would really appreciate it if in this new year we could find a way to have home deliveries safely and effectively and without the risk of being prosecuted. I thank you guys for your time, and thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Holland. Linda Hill, followed by Leon Golden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the board and staff, public. My name is Linda Hill. I'm a 30-year county resident. I'm currently retired, but the majority of my professional life was spent working in the criminal justice system, including serving as director of the Region P Office of Criminal Justice Planning, serving your body, this county, Santa Barbara County, and all the cities therein. I am currently volunteering as a board member for San Luis Obispo Area's chapter on Americans for Safe Access. I am pleased that you have already heard from a provider and a patient in this heart-rending issue that we continue to be confronted against. These raids that were conducted last week are morally an outrage. They are despicable, they are unconscionable, and they cannot be allowed to continue. You have heard already from one provider that, by all accounts, has followed every possible letter of the ordinances and the proposition and the laws that are in effect to provide medicinal cannabis to patients who are suffering. And I won't go into the larger failed war on drugs, which is a continual failure and a waste of money, but to now continue to target patients who are the end line victims of these stormtrooper rage conducted, pulling kids out of their homes. I understand that one person suffered a heart attack. This simply cannot stand. It's not right. It's not reasonable. It is not in good spirit. It's not in good faith. And again, the people who ultimately suffer are not only the service providers who are doing their very best to be in full compliance, but the patients in your constituencies who are suffering. And let me remind you, they are in the shadows. This area, and in my 30 years here, I well recognize it. I did not decide to speak up until only the last year myself, because I feel so strongly about this particular medical issue. But you have constituents that include professionals of the highest order that you don't know are patients. You have people who remain in the shadows because of justifiable paranoia. All we can say to you as our chapter of Americans for Safe Access, please try and come out. Please try and speak up. We are here to hear you. We want to get the word out. We need to make changes in the Central Coast. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you, ma'am. Leon Golden, followed by Martha Golden.
Well, this latest rain has brought us some interesting developments in the sewer area. Now, there have been some rather large spills, etc. I note that on your agenda, you're going to be talking about spending another almost $250,000 on the great downhill sewer in Los Osos. But nothing seems to be done about trying to find out what happened during the last rain. It might be instructive to study that, assuming that we have somebody who's qualified in our Public Works Department who could go and check each one of these failures of the sewer to perform in a proper manner. And I urge you to instruct the whoever is in charge to get on with that project. I must also comment on the comments of our new chair, particularly his last comment in which he said that no profanity should be used. And we've had a previous speaker who used a word that some might think is profane, but in doing so, she was quoting a sheriff's deputy who said the word in while he was performing a duty as a sheriff's deputy. It would seem to me that you, the supervisors of this county, and the rest of us who listen to this program would be interested to find, and perhaps the sheriff also, who I think was present at the time, interested to find out about how law enforcement treats civilians. Also, I would say with all due respect, Chairman Hill, you're going down the road to all sorts of controversy, and I don't have the time to deal with it today, but I will in future.
Thank you, Mr. Golden. Judge Golden, followed by Ben DeFada.
Good morning. First, I want to join Judy Vick in urging you to take a position that minimally we have a temporary halt to the wireless smart meters and join other communities throughout the nation that have done so. That's not why I came here this morning. Second, I want to say that Mr. Golden and I are not Bobbsey twins, and it's just coincidence that our slips got in on the same time. However, some of our theme is the same. Today, I want to talk about the prohibited word merde. I won't translate it because our chairperson might think that it is somehow profane. It is not, provided one could figure out what profanity is, a subject that the United States Supreme Court had a lot of trouble with. But it's, you know, I won't translate it, but we'll talk about it. There has been a lot of it flowing out of gravity sewers throughout the county. Not any other kind of sewage disposal systems, not any other kind of wastewater system. And the reason is quite simple. Those kinds of systems are so designed that it is next to impossible to stop inflow, that's the stuff coming in from the outside, and outflow, the stuff that came out of many of the work access holes, sexistly, if there is such a word, known as manholes, work access holes throughout this county. In fact, driving on Christmas Eve into Shell Beach, driving down one of the streets, it was very interesting to see that not only was one of the work access holes still bubbling forth, who knows what, but that an entire street with many, many work access holes had every one of those lined with a plastic bag or cover of some sort. Every one of those. Guess why? Because gravity sewers leak. No matter what you do about them, they are going to pour forth raw merde from time to time if there is enough rain, and that's happened all over this county. It's happened more than once in the South County and less frequently in other areas. Now this board is planning to foist that upon Los Osos, think again, please.
Thank you, Judge Golden. Mr. DeFatta, followed by Eric Greening.
Good morning, Chairman Hill, Supervisors. Welcome, Supervisor Teixeira. We hope to bring you up to date on how several thousand people will be thrown out of their homes on account of Mr. Gibson and this board's unaffordable pursuing this unaffordable, expensive, overpriced, antiquated, stinking gravity collection components proposal. I am Ben DeFatta, by the way. To wrap up the old year, a report card of this county's grade as far as Los Osos Sewer is concerned follows. Chairman Meacham, for giving us back our 3 minutes for a public comment that Mr. Gibson took away, and his concerns for affordability for us, we give you an A+. Mr. Gibson, for spearheading the failed wastewater project for Los Osos, you get a minus F. You other three supervisors for not making this an affordable project and continuing to give study money to Gibson and the wasting of the public's money, $8 million, probably up to $10 million pretty soon. You three get an F, too. For the wasteful spending of other people's money, you get an F. For not firing Ogren and his staff long ago, you get an F. For not caring for the public and businesses in Los Osos, you get an F. For wanting to build this project in the middle of Los Osos, you get an F. The Broderson disposal, the failure to recharge 1 million gallons after your engineers said, go ahead and do it, the aquifer, to save the water in the aquifer after you were warned that a catastrophe like the La Conchita disaster could occur, you get another F. For still dealing with the same old flawed contractors, you get an F. For wanting to build this project on 643 acres of ag land out of our basin's aquifer when 30 acres was sufficient, you get another F. For wanting to spray our precious water in the air never to be seen again, you get another F. For not looking at low pressure and vacuum affordable alternatives, you get an F. For not caring about protecting our neighbors and businesses from an economic disaster, you get an F. For wasting $8 million we don't have for studies paid to the same old contractors, you get an F. For bait and switching the cost from $140 million to $200 million for the simple project that one with common sense could do, you get an F. For wasting 3+ years of causing saltwater intrusion to come to our dwindling water supply, you get an F. For one ex-supervisor who went out of her way of telling the public you can't cross a creek with a sewer pipe so that we can build it in the middle of town, she gets an F, too. For not giving the courtesy of talking to alternative sewer firms, you get an F. For not heeding past performances, you get an F. Your past performance tells us that the board doesn't want to save money. For that, you get an F. For not putting the people of Los Angeles first, you get an F.
Mr. DeFatta. Yes, your sir. Time is up. We don't want to give you an F for running over. Mr.
Well,
Greening, and followed by Piper
I'm
Riley.
I'm a C student all my life, and this is all
Thank
new
you,
to
Mr.
me.
Thank you, Mr.
And
Greening,
I'm not here for my
Piper
health.
Followed by Piper Riley.
Good morning. I am Eric Greening, and first in follow-up, I agree that we should agendize hearings about the smart meters, including remediation for those who are already stuck with them. We should have hearing a review of the sewage spill and their causes and the ability of the county to control these issues and to experience restitution under Public Resources Code 2512.5. And the Oceano flooding issues are probably sort of a separate hearing. That was one of the areas of sewage spills. And certainly equal access to medication should be the subject of a county hearing. Every pharmacy in this county dispenses substances that would become illegal if they were redealt on the street. But it seems like there's one particular medication not dealt in pharmacies whose users are often treated as criminals. And again, equal access to medication should be a civil rights issue. But my original purpose in coming up here is simply to welcome Mr. Teixeira. I know he has a record of public service, both elected and appointed, and in civic organizations, and I very much look forward to his presence here. I'd like to welcome Mr. Hill to the hot seat. I know this is going to be a challenging year between state budget shoes dropping on us and all the other things that are coming at us this year. I hope that you have as productive a year as it's possible when we're dealing with everything coming at us. And I would like to thank Mr. Meacham for an excellent year of chairing. I would particularly like to thank Mr. Meacham for an entire year during which no member of the public ever was required to speak for less than 3 minutes. It was nice to remind people that we didn't have to occupy our entire 3 minutes, but we only had a couple of meetings that ran extra long, and those could have been prevented by better distribution of items among meetings, because usually there was an adjacent meeting that was short. So basically, public comment during the last year was treated not as a problem, but simply as part of the meeting. And I would certainly recommend that to all future chairs. And I will leave the last 30 seconds as a sign that we don't have to be told to stop talking before the 3 minutes is up. We can just do it if we don't have more to say. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Greening. Piper Riley, followed by Betty Winholz.
Good morning, Board. I am Piper Riley from Los Osos, and here to everything that Eric Greening said. I would like to speak about several issues. First, in Los Osos, the drainage issue in Ravenna is not being addressed adequately. It is called Ravenna for a reason, and the county is focusing on the wrong side of the road and only addressing part of the problem. This is a potential death trap in a liquefaction zone beneath Broderson's 600 homes. Most of you supervisors, these words should be ringing bells. Another obvious and much ignored issue is the failure of the conventional gravity sewers in this county, like the Carollo Engineered Men's Colony and the Wallace-run Oceano plant, which have been spilling consistently for some time now. Though we have been giving examples of failing conventional systems both locally and statewide for years, we have been ignored. This past week's overflows were everywhere except in Los Osos. From south of Oceano to north of Morro Bay, the oceans and our waterways are excrement-filled messes. This is raw sewage flowing out of manholes, even behind the Atascadero City Hall, which will hopefully be a serious wake-up call. Gravity collection and conventional treatment is dangerous and polluting waterways everywhere. This is a fact. And forcing Los Osos to put in this obsolete and hazardous system, which also happens to be the most expensive, is more than irresponsible. It is criminal. Exposure to pathogens and toxins in raw sewage, when they can be avoided, should make you liable for the damages. Since the Tribune does not like to report on any of these issues, may I suggest the Internet? You can go to websites like calcoastnews.com and see Karen Veeley's articles, or go to slowcoastjournal.com and read Carol Georgie's or Jack McCurdy's articles. Lastly, I would like to bring up smart meters also. They are now being boycotted in many areas. These are controversial devices, and though there are some who say they are not harmful, there's a great deal of evidence to say otherwise. And I would like your board to consider that science evolves. I wouldn't have wanted to be one of those guys from the last century who said that smoking isn't harmful and that cocaine isn't addictive. EMRs are cumulative, and their effects are dangerous. And supporting such devices, which are going to reduce jobs and may cause serious harm to the public health, needs to have more investigation before being forced upon the populace as a whole. Thank you for my time.
Thank you. Ms. Winholz, followed by Joan Carter.
Good morning. My name is Betty Winholz. I am speaking today to you regarding taking action on smart meters here in the county. A month ago in the city of Morro Bay, as her last act in office, Mayor Janice Peters brought forward a resolution regarding smart meters to the city council. Public comments and the council's discussion included these six concerns. 1, effects of health. 2, increases in bills. 3, securing privacy for personal data. 4, timing with the introduction of AB 37 that creates alternatives. 5, the lack of prior public notice and education. And 6, actions taken by other cities and counties. This resolution passed, and it had 4 stipulations. 1, urge PG&E to not install for 180 days
or until AB 37 is addressed one way or the other by the state legislature. 2, urge PG&E to provide a forum for residents to express their concerns. 3, urge PG&E to provide an option of wireless devices, i.e. to opt out or the hardwired. 4, urge PG&E to secure strict privacy for the data they collect. I urge you to offer county residents the same consideration that we offered the residents of Morro Bay. Please agendize smart meters to discuss also delaying their installation for those who have not yet received them in the county for 180 days or until AB 37 is dealt with. I have with me flyers that can be taped to meters for anyone in the audience who would like one. They read, "Do not install the smart meter here." Though it's a symbolic gesture, it is a message that has been honored in other locations across the state. Thank you.
Thank you. And if you could provide that to the one copy to the clerk, I'd appreciate that. Joan Carter, followed by Lindy Owen.
My name is Joan Carter, and I am speaking also about the smart meters, and I am hoping that you are going to take a good look at this and wait until the AB 37 is passed and we can explore other alternative wired measures. Now, I just moved from Morro Bay into San Luis, and I was very pleased about Morro Bay, which is not exactly a progressive hub, that they passed this ordinance that would hold off and really take a good look at whether this was a good idea or not. So I was very pleased they did it, and I'm hoping that San Luis Obispo, now that I live here, is going to do the same. Thank you.
Thank you. Lindy Owen, followed by Richard Margetson.
Good morning, Lindy Owen from Los Osos. I'd like to begin by thanking Mr. Meacham for a very good year of, I believe, keeping the sunshine on the political areas that have been brought up by citizens, and also for his patience and giving us the extra time to speak. It is appreciated. And I welcome Mr. Hill and hope that he can follow in the same big shoes. I wanted to also agree with the smart meter. I believe you need to put a hold on any, make a statement to keep them from going in right now while we look at them a little closer. Everything I've read says red alert, don't go there. And then I also support that we get some kind of intervention between the Sheriff's Department to stop breaking into these cannabis clinics. There is no excuse for that, and it is basically up to our Sheriff's Department to make that decision, and I think they need to have intervention from you to say that that is a citizen's right to have access. I wanted to then go on to speak about the rains and the amount of spills that we had. All seven cities along the coast were spilling during the worst of the rains in mid-December. And again, it goes from manholes. It flies up out of manholes. There's pipe breaks. There was plant overload. Faulty backups that failed. Oceano was very sad to have spilled 100 million gallons, excuse me, due to bad maintenance by their engineer, John Wallace and Associates. I wanted to say that underreporting the spills does not help, and I believe that is something that is starting to be a little bit more common. It's hiding the information. And when you have faulty equipment and you have these types of systems, the gravity collection is the most dangerous type of collection if you want to keep waterways clean. You do not install them in places like Los Osos because they break. We're the one city that didn't spill. Morro Bay didn't report spills, but I will tell you that half of their flushing does not arrive for treatment. We ask you again we're still going to be trying to get a better system, the pressurized system, into Los Osos. It's essential if we want to solve any future spills from our city. And then the drainage in Los Osos was not addressed. We are two sections of Los Osos Valley Road are undermined by the county ignoring the drainage issues.
and I hope that we can get some attention put on them and get something done correctly this time after spending hundreds of thousands already. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Owen. Mr. Margetson, followed by Craig Steffens.
Richard Margetson. First, Mr. Hill, some advice. Be very careful on your opening remarks about determining what is slanderous, profane, or personal remarks. I think you need to read the Brown Act again. I think you need to read the First Amendment again and study some case law, because it's not for you to determine the extent to what a commenter has said that slanderous or personal attacks. I think that's for the person that has been potentially slandered or damaged to bring that type of action. And there are organizations in this state that are looking for these type of opportunities. I know personally, because at one point two members of the Los Osos Board of Directors tried to bring such a action against me. I was defended by the Anti-SLAPP Coalition out of San Francisco. Hands down won the case. Damages were called for from the plaintiffs, which they still have not paid. So just be very careful, because you really cannot control what's said at this microphone. Second comment. On December 14th, you adopted a rates and charges ordinance. You, for years, have talked about the affordability issue. After adopting that ordinance, please, not one of you that voted for it, talk about affordability for Los Osos. You had an opportunity to lower 98% of the community's bills at that point. There was overwhelming evidence. We met with Mr. Meacham, director from the CSD, and myself met with Mr. Meacham, gave him evidence, gave him some extra evidence that we thought he might bring up that day that wasn't relevant to the ordinance about the middle school, which is still a problem for me, why the middle school isn't being connected to a project when they potentially are going to be discharging $2.3 million or 2.3 million gallons a year of effluent into our groundwater basin. But we were led to believe that staff developed this ordinance, that Will Clemens had developed this ordinance, and all the answers were at the staff level. Well, after having made some records requests and gathered some additional information, turns out, gentlemen, that in October of last year, shortly before it was put on consent calendar for your 45-day waiting period to pass the ordinance, the county received from Public Financial Management out of Seattle, Washington, the Los Osos Project analysis, which has the exact same charts that were in the ordinance.
Thank you, Mr. Margetson. Craig Steffens, followed by Linda Aketa.
Hello, I'm Craig Steffens. Thank you, Board. I was born and raised in capital city, Sacramento, of this great republic. I came to this county in 1984 after serving my overseas tour of regular army to attend Cal Poly. And I just wanted to say I want to thank our local law enforcement agencies for targeting these medical marijuana distributions in our county and not wasting our tax dollars on targeting methamphetamines and heroin and cocaine distribution throughout the county. In order to further this campaign to protect our county from marijuana, I would like to propose that we initiate, that you, this board here, initiate an ordinance that we begin drug testing our law enforcement agencies, our prosecutors, it's our district attorney's office, our judges, and our boards. We all know that nobody has anything to hide here. Marijuana is such a dangerous drug that we should ensure that our leaders are as clean as our enforcement officers that are prosecuting. I think that's something this community would love to see. I think people in this community really appreciate our tax dollars being going after grandmothers and putting children into CPS. I know none of you here have anything to do with any illicit drugs whatsoever, never have. And I don't think I have much else to say. I think it all speaks for itself. Thank you very much.
Ms. Ketta, and our final public comment, Richard Donald.
Hi, my name is Linda Ikeda. I have a Bachelor of Science and used to tutor cell biology as well as anatomy and physiology. Andrew Weil, Harvard-trained and internationally known medical doctor, says that electromagnetic pollution may be the most significant form of pollution human activity has produced. The smart meter technology that has been deployed by PG&E adds yet another layer of electromagnetic pollution in the form of microwave emissions over our communities. We have over 20 cities, including Morro Bay and three counties in California, opposing PG&E's smart meter installation. This is prudent since PG&E reports 43,000 problems. We also need to stop and consider the details of such a problematic technology. There have been 2,000 health complaints to the California Public Utilities Commission. For every complaint filed, how many have not complained? These meters radiate microwaves considered lethal by the Stanford Research Institute, horizontally 360 degrees. They can transmit over 2 miles. Even the neighbor smart meters can and has affected people. In Atascadero, where PG&E has been installing smart meters, neighbors have complained of a sudden increase in fibromyalgia symptoms, sleep problems, and headache. I also noticed that the birds had almost disappeared. It turned out that smart meters were installed in the neighborhood about the same time, but not yet at these people's homes. At my house, the blue jays that I feed all year stopped coming. Following is one of several complaints listed at emfsafetynetwork.org. Quote, I have been in the ER overnight 3 times this week with unexplained sickness. We recently had a smart meter installed, and these symptoms began about a week after. Extreme stress, diagnosed TIAs, or small strokes, dizziness, headaches, nausea, and fainting. I mentioned this to a doctor, and he suggested that the smart meters may have something to do with it, because the hospital has had quite a rise in illness of this kind, reporting to the ER. Will there be even more sicknesses at our hospitals when the wireless antennas and the rest of the infrastructure is installed and running? Yet another blanket of wireless emissions? Each home smart meter will act something like a cell tower that transmits wireless frequencies as often as every few seconds, using lethal frequencies and transmitting utility usage from house to house. There is no research proving that this technology is safe. Thankfully, there's Assembly Bill 37 in the state legislature that allows PG&E customers to opt out of the wireless smart meter installation. I would like to urge you to halt installation of wireless smart meters in San Luis Obispo County until AB 37 is enacted into law. Thank you.
Thank you. And Richard Donald.
Hello, Mr. Chairman, Supervisors. My name is Richard Donald. I'm the chairman for the San Luis Obispo chapter of Americans for Safe Access. Mr. Hill, you've clearly seen a big change between the events of yesterday's Mr. Parkinson swearing-in ceremony and today. Obviously, we have some people that are very upset. My reason for coming forward was, and my reason for being here yesterday, during the debates that the sheriffs who were running for office, I went to the Black Lake Country Club and talked to each individual person running for office there. And Mr. Parkinson, when I approached him, I asked him if he thought a collective was operating outside of the Attorney General's guidelines, how you would handle that. And his words to me were, if I thought they were acting out of guidelines, I would call them up, I would tell them what they're doing wrong, I would give them time to fix the problem before I started an initial investigation. After I had heard that personally, I decided that I wanted to volunteer for Mr. Parkinson's campaign and do everything I could to get him into office. What's happened recently is people who have legitimate business licenses, have been paying taxes, have mutual benefit nonprofit corporations, people who put up websites on the internet and put their phone numbers out there trying to operate legal businesses were targeted. And these people were arrested, and now they're suffering greatly. I really do feel that in the county, if we're going to look at who's legal and who's not legal and go after the illegal people, really it should be done not versus people who
serve someone with a valid recommendation from a doctor that was verified and over the age of 21, you should be going after people who are going after the junior high school kids, people who are clearly criminal elements and are not trying to stay within the rules of the law. I would just ask that you could do whatever you could to help these people who have been charged with these crimes, and in the future do something to stop law enforcement from targeting people who are trying to follow the law. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. And a couple of comments I see from my colleagues. I just wanted to weigh in real quickly, too, to those who spoke on the Oceano floods and related matters. Supervisor Teixeira and I are going to be meeting this week with Public Works to get further information so that we are better informed on all of the issues related to that. Supervisor Patterson.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I would ask the county administrator, if he would, to follow up and give us more information on the sheriff's actions on December 28th relative to the medical marijuana pursuits. I'm curious to know exactly what the details are on that and then how we might follow up with our new sheriff.
Thank you. Supervisor Gibson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I share Mr. Patterson's interest in that information and having a conversation with our new sheriff on a rational approach to this, because quite clearly we have some significant issues and it's a tough thing, medical marijuana, given it rests in a between the rock of the federal regulation and the hard spot of community values and state law. And I think we need to come up with a sensible way of approaching it, and I'd be interested in that as well. I'd like to follow on also just to advise colleagues that I've asked our Public Works Department, working with Environmental Health and possibly the Office of Emergency Services, to compile a list of the sewage spills, their amounts and the underlying reasons of them. As I indicated by my questions regarding the Lopez Lake sewer system management plan, any sewer system, no matter what technology it's using, requires ongoing monitoring, ongoing maintenance, and a very careful care to make sure that it's operating properly. And I would just simply close by observing with mild amusement individuals who came to our microphone to indicate that, of course, there was no sewage spill in Los Osos, whereas, in fact, the septic tanks in Los Osos, close to the very shallow groundwater, which discharge incompletely treated septage into that groundwater and then into the Morro Bay National Estuary, are in effect an ongoing sewage spill of some hundreds of thousands of gallons of effluent a day. And that's the very reason why we are working so diligently to get a community sewer system in place there.
Thank you. Supervisor Patterson?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I also wanted to thank the number of folks that came this morning to speak to the SMART meter issue. It is something that we've been hearing more and more about, and I do want to follow up with that. So I appreciate you bringing that to our attention so we can follow up.
Supervisor Meacham.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And regarding the smart meters, maybe all the Blue Jays left your house, but they showed up at mine, and I do have a smart meter that's been installed. However, my rate has doubled, and I have contacted PG&E. There's a 800 number that you can call them, and they are coming out to do an audit Thursday to do an audit on that meter and some comparisons. We have all the documentation to show what has changed here and why it has changed the way it has. So I would be interested to have PG&E's input on this regarding these smart meters.
Thank you. Maybe those Blue Jays have been using your electricity. Your hot tub. Okay. All right. Thank you very much. The board's going to take a 10-minute break, and we'll be back at 10:40. Thank you.
Thank you.
No, the microphones are live.
Okay, we're going to get started. Go into our hearings. Thank you. If everybody would take a seat or exit, that would be appreciate it. Madam Clerk, would you introduce the first hearing item?
That would be item D1, a submittal of the county's 2010 annual report. Recommend the item be received and filed.
Thank you, Mr. Grant.
Thank you very much, Jim Grant, County Administrator. Today, I'm very pleased to present to you the county's first online and first, I think, ever annual report. This is meant to be an interactive report and entirely online. No copies were made to save on the copy cost, and it really doesn't do it justice to have a copy made, and you'll see that in just a moment as we put it up on the screen, which we've done. Just a little history. One of your board's goals has been to enhance the communication with the public, and this report was prepared to inform residents about the literally hundreds of services that the county provides and highlight some of the major accomplishments that the county departments have recently received. The report is meant not only to inform but to hopefully help residents to better utilize county services and to be more engaged in the county government process. The report is a high-level report, but it is comprehensive on how the county operates and the services it delivers. I don't think many people realize that there are 22 departments and literally hundreds and hundreds of services that the county provides. And as Supervisor Meacham has said many times, we provide cradle-to-grave services, and that certainly is true. And we provide birth certificates, we provide public health, and we provide parks and libraries and social services for those in need, public safety and roads, so just a variety of services that we have here. So without further ado here, I want to show you some portions of the report, again, that are online. So Emily Jackson will be running this, and so we'll do a brief preview of what's going on. The first section here is a message from the board chair, and this is a welcome from chairperson Meacham, and so he has a little brief introduction on that. And it's, again, very interactive. If we go and click on any of the little pieces, this one about us, it goes into the message from the board, what the Board of Supervisors themselves. If you click on that, it goes to the board page and shows the public, all of the board members, and the areas they represent. So from there, we can go back up to some of the about us. We go from our mission and values. We can go to that page, click on that. If you go there and take a look at what we're doing here, if we go to a safe community, which is part of our vision statement, it defines what that vision statement is. If we go to the right over to organizational values on integrity, it will show you how the integrity is defined in terms of our organizational values. So going back, there's a number of different ways we can do this. We can take a look at countywide financials is another one. Let's take a look at that very quickly. This shows how our property tax dollar is distributed by government agency. And as you can see, the schools really receive the most of our property tax dollar. They receive over 63%, and the county government somewhere in the neighborhood of 24%. So we break down those. If you could turn the page on that, we can just flip the page over, and we get to our expenditures by function, the outstanding debt that we have, and other categories of expenditures. Flip it again one more time. What we have here are positions by our functional areas, which we'll look at in just a moment, and then our credit rating. And it's many folks probably don't know that we've had an excellent credit rating, a AAA credit rating, for almost 20 years now, or 15 years now. So we've had the highest credit rating from the Fitch Ratings, which is a nationally recognized and statistical organization. That helps us in terms of when we go out and look for additional dollars to borrow money, the interest rates are much lower. So if we go back, and let's just go now to the departments themselves. Why don't you go back up to land-based? We just take a look at those organizations that are in our land-based departments, the ag office here. And from here, too, you can also go into the actual website of the Agricultural Commissioner. So it it drills down to a deeper level than what we have here. We're trying to hit the high points on what these what our departments do and some of the accomplishments that have been made over the last year, and maybe a story that tells a little bit about something that's happened that is positive for the community. So if we move on, back there, go back into it, please. Go to public protection very quick. So we have our county fire, child support, all the other ones. So here we have two pages, and flip the page on fire. And what did they do? And how did we know that we have 180 full-time state employees who operate our county fire department? They're called Cal Fire, the state fire agency. And so we give some facts and figures on that. So really just kind of wrapping it up here, we go through all of the 22 departments. We take a look at everything that's been going on, and we do provide you an opportunity to drill down to a little different level and show what the county's been doing and the services, what we provide. So with that, I'm going to thank, first of all, the staff who worked very diligently putting this together. And first and foremost, Penny Berciaga, who is my secretary, who has done a phenomenal job of putting this together. We didn't expend any cost on this other than staff cost, and we used no consultants in putting this together as well. And I think the product is a great example of the good work that the county employees can do. We also had Emily Jackson and Jeff Oquest help us on the editing. All departments submitted information. We went through it and cut it down to what we felt were bite-sized pieces to make something that we felt was very usable and very user-friendly. So with that, I want to thank staff and present this to your board. It is on our website, the county's website, slocounty.ca.gov. And so I'm hoping that the public will take a look at it and see what we're up to. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Grant. And we'll have some comments and questions from my colleagues. And I also want to thank Penny in particular, who did a great job on creating this this digital document. I got a preview last week, and then I swiped their hard copy, their sort of sums the dot edition, which is really bad compared to what's online, because you can go to all the links and play Angry Birds, I think. but it's really, I think it's actually really valuable for people who really don't understand the great variety, the many-sidedness of the county government, to get some information and to have the ability to get even further information. As you saw, even on some of the financial snapshots, you're able to go into the budget document itself, which is, you know, to some people rather intimidating, but you can get everything you want. And I think that the admin staff, Emily and Jeff, did a good job of editing each department's information so that it's really pertinent and interesting. So I think it's really valuable for us to continue to tell our story. I know it's unfashionable in these times to actually want to say good things about government, but I think we should. I'm very thankful for this first annual and look forward to it continuing. So with that, looks like my colleagues want to weigh in. Let's begin with Supervisor Patterson.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to thank County Admin and all the departments that participated in this. I took some time a few days ago to actually go online and look through the report and was really impressed. It's a great primer, just taking the face pages of the various departments. It's a great primer on county government. We should let all of our county civics teachers know that this exists. It's a great tool for them. And as Mr. Grant said, anyone that is interested in county services can find it on this website. I'm just curious to know, how are we going to let people know that this even exists? I think that we need to really advertise the fact that this resource is available to people, and I haven't heard a discussion about how we might do that. I know I've visited other counties where they actually put a lot of emphasis on government and what services they provide in various public forums. They'll be there educating the community about what either city government does and what county government does, and this is a wonderful tool for us to use to do just that, and I would like to see us have an internal conversation about how we get the word out that this great resource exists.
We have been thinking about that, and first and foremost, we'll just do a press release and get the press notified that this is here, and hopefully they'll take a look at it and help spread the word. We can also talk to all the cities as well, mm-hmm. And so in my conversations with the city managers, I can promote this as well. As a matter of fact, just one of the features is if we do look at all of we do show all of the cities in here, and you can go right to every city's website from this document as well. So right here it shows you if we hit that, it would go right to Paso Robles' website, as you can see on the board right there. So we're going to work hard to get this out, and I'm open to any suggestions your board might have. Thank you.
Yeah, I think I like that suggestion about the
Swimming
in with caffeine.
Happy New Year. Is this a new service that's
yes,
being provided?
Because we didn't have any ready.
Right. I like telling the classes. I think that's a good idea to get, because most, you know, I don't know if you have the Cub Scouts and others visit you, and they don't really, you know, all I can do is take them in the secret elevator. That's the only thing that they're interested in.
Well, and yeah. Supervisor Hill, when I had the Creston Elementary School come in, we had Smokey the Bear. And so that is something.
There's a good idea. Maybe a county mascot is what we need to really make this annual report.
Moving right along.
Okay, Supervisor Meacham, who I know as a bear cat.
Just quickly, Penny, my hat's off to you. This was an incredible effort that you put together here, along with other staff. This was amazing.
Awesome.
Just for my colleagues, my intent to do to spread the word on this. For example, tonight I'll attend the Paso Robles City Council meeting, and they go live on the air, so I can promote it there to let them know. And during my office hours, as well as meeting with the advisory boards that I represent, I will let them know that as well. Just two questions. I'm surprised that we've never done this before. This will be an annual effort.
Yes, it will.
And then the only criticism I had was the picture of the old guy at the very beginning.
He had hair, though.
We can airbrush those.
Yeah, I'm going to need that. No, that's good ideas, too, letting our councils and our special districts know. I think that's an excellent idea. Supervisor Gibson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My hat's off to Penny and all who worked on this as well. It's outstanding. My other thought in adding to the marketing campaign here is to make sure this gets distributed to our libraries.
Yeah.
And particular effort to reach out to the branch managers to make sure that they know how to get there, and maybe they can set up a little advertising for us there. I think that there's this is one of the most accessible and user-friendly bits of computer ware that I have ever seen, actually, mm-hmm. and I'd like to see our libraries become a helpful conduit for people getting connected with their county government.
Thank you. I see Supervisor Hill is the next speaker, but I'm guessing that it's actually Supervisor Teixeira.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Mr. Gibson took the words right out of my mouth. My compliments to staff for the job that they did, and I'd like to see them at the libraries also with some kind of little ad out there that tell them, we offer free computer service not only at the county libraries but at the city libraries also, and to promote this in that way so people are more aware of what's going on and what happens at the county.
Yeah, excellent. I think there's a lot of ways to spread the word, and hopefully the press will help us to begin with that. So let me open this to public comment. I do not have any slips for public comment on this, and this is a receive and file, so I'll close it to public comment. And any other questions, comments from board members? Again, I really thank everybody involved in this. I remember speaking with Mr. Grant about this some months back, and it's really surpassed what I expected, so good work, and we will move on. Okay, Madam Clerk, we've received and filed that, so if you would introduce the next item.
Your next item is a D2 in response to the Governor's suspension of AB 3632 mandate on counties to provide mental health services to special education students. And in the matter of saving time, I'm not going to read anymore.
Okay. I see Mr. Oquest scrambling, so I'll go over to Mr.
Thank
Grant.
Thank you, Jim Grant, County Administrator. This next item really revolves around a contract that we have had with the schools and the state for quite some time that provides special education students who require mental health services to get those services to them, as well as some group home placements. What has occurred just recently in October is that Governor Schwarzenegger, the then Governor Schwarzenegger, used his line item veto authority to delete funding for what is called AB 3632 services, which are the services I just described, in the 2010-11 state budget. And in doing that, he suspended the mandate that required counties to provide mental health services for special education students. That's caused quite a stir in California, and there is some there are some lawsuits being filed regarding that, and so we don't know the impact of those right at this time. But the suspension really leads us here today in that board policy requires that if the state stops funding services, whatever they may be, that we stop funding those services as well. So if the mandate is suspended, the funding is not there, then the budget policies say we should stop doing that. And we know that in this case it's a bit problematic, and we wanted to bring it to your board for a couple of different reasons, to talk about the policy issues that we have before us and the fact that we have made some progress in maintaining those services, both the mental health services and the group home services, through the end of the fiscal year, because we have got together with the Special Education Local Planning Area, which is called SELPA for short, in that they'll provide additional money that the state's not providing so that we can continue those services. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Jeff, who's going to get into a little bit more detail on this in terms of how we're handling this, what it means this year, and what it could mean for next year in some policy items. Jeff?
Thank you. Go ahead. The slides. Good morning, Mr. Chair, honorable board members. As Jim says, I'm going to go into a little bit more detail on the things that he just touched on and essentially give an overview of the information that was provided in the staff report. Under federal law, special education students who need mental health services are entitled to those services as part of their right to a free and appropriate public education. And in California, under AB 3632, for the last 25 years, certain roles have been mandated for school districts, county mental health, and county social services. School districts have been responsible for delivering mental health services that can be provided by their counseling and guidance services, and county mental health services have been responsible for providing those mental health services that were beyond the capacity of the schools. Social services departments were responsible at the direction of county mental health for placing children who need institutional care in designated group homes. And as Jim stated, last October, Governor Schwarzenegger vetoed the funding for AB 3632 for the current budget year, and in doing so stated that he was also suspending the AB 3632 mandated roles for county mental health and social services. In the absence of this mandate, the responsibility to ensure special education students receive the mental health services that they're entitled to falls to the local school districts and the SELPA, the Special Education Local Planning Area. SELPA is a state-mandated regional entity that's responsible for overseeing and supporting the delivery of services to special education students, and it represents the county's local school districts. It serves as the fiscal agent for special education costs and acts as the liaison between the districts and the California Department of Education. And Jill Hoyer, the SELPA director, is here today to participate in the discussion about the future of these services. The governor's decision to suspend the mandate has caused a great deal of confusion across the state as schools and counties have scrambled to figure out how to proceed in the absence of the mandate. I'm going to talk about two different pieces here as I go forward. The first piece is mental health services. Let me go ahead and get my slide going. As covered in the staff report, the first piece is mental health services, and we have approximately 260 special education students in the county who are receiving some sort of mental health services currently through the county. And for the current fiscal year, we have budgeted approximately $1.9 million in total expenditures. As is the case each year, the majority of these costs are covered by Medi-Cal and federal funding through the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, or our IDEA funding. That covers approximately 88% of the estimated costs for this year, which is similar to previous years. However, due to the governor's veto of AB 3632, the additional 12% that would make up the total funding for these services will not be forthcoming. Now, normally, as Jim said, the board's adopted policy is that if the state makes cuts to funding, we would make commensurate cuts. But in this case, SELPA, working with mental health, has already agreed to cover the costs for this year. And as shown on the slide there, that 12% that would be cut due to the governor's veto amounts to approximately $230,000. So SELPA has agreed that they will cover what was formerly the state's portion, the general fund portion from the state, amounting to $230,000, and therefore we think we can continue with the existing relationship with county mental health without a break in service. So the first recommendation in the staff report is that the board approve a contract that has already been worked out with SELPA, and that we continue to provide these services with SELPA covering those costs. Second part is the responsibilities assigned to social services for group home placements. Now, Department of Social Services' responsibility at the direction of mental health services is to place the very small number of students who require institutional care into group homes. Currently, we have three students who are in group home placements. That amounts to a very small percentage of the 260 or so students that have individual education plans for special education. Currently, we project that the total cost by the end of this year will amount to nearly $400,000. And this is significant because the state, under normal circumstances, before the mandate was suspended, would have covered 40% of this cost by reimbursing us. We do not expect that the state will reimburse us either for the costs incurred after the governor's veto or for the 3 months that were already incurred before he signed the veto in October. We've heard from other counties that they also have not received any reimbursement for those 3 months. So we expect that if we were to take no action, we would be on the hook for the full cost of all the placements for this year, which would amount to approximately $390,000. So because we are no longer mandated to provide these services and because we no longer expect to receive state funding, that presents us with a situation where we have at least three different options outlined in the staff report. First one shown here is we could immediately discontinue our participation, both in making of placements and in providing payment for those, and as of the end of January 31st, basically immediately discontinue our role in making group home placements. That would turn it over to SELPA, who would then be responsible for the remaining costs for the remainder of the fiscal year, which we estimate to be approximately $156,000. Option two would provide for a transition period, basically running out to the end of the fiscal year, in which we would continue to pay the 60% share of costs estimated at $234,000, and SELPA would cover the 40% share, formerly the responsibility of the state. And that would get us to the end of the year. And at that time, we would hand over to SELPA the responsibility for full cost beginning on July 1st, at the beginning of fiscal year 11-12. As part of option two, I should point out that we would be asking SELPA to cover, as shown here, that $156,000, which covers all 12 months of what would have been the state's share. So thereby, they would be paying retroactively for what the state has failed to cover. Additionally, there's a third option that's presented. This is essentially the continuation of what we had done when the mandate was still in effect. The county would continue to pay its 60% share. SELPA would cover what was formerly the state's 40% share. And the main difference here being that we would not be transitioning out of this role at the end of the fiscal year, instead continuing on. Staff recommends option two based on the fact that the state is no longer providing their funding and we are no longer under a mandate to provide these services, and that's in line with, as Jim stated, your board's standing policy.
I might also add that the lawsuits are still out there and being discussed, so we don't know what is going to happen in the future, and I don't know. We have county council who can discuss very briefly what those lawsuits are all about. Rita, would you like to do that?
Yes, Rita Neal, Assistant County Counsel. There are currently three lawsuits within the state. The first is the lead county is County of Sacramento. There's 36 counties involved in that. The County of San Luis Obispo is one of them. That lawsuit asks for the court to declare that if the governor had the authority to suspend the mandate, that the counties don't have to provide the service if they don't get reimbursed. There is a second lawsuit filed by Clovis Unified School District and the California Schools Association. That lawsuit's been filed in Southern California, and they are asking the court to declare that the governor had no power to suspend the mandate and that the counties must continue to provide the services even if they don't get paid. Those plaintiffs in that case have also requested to intervene in the County of Sacramento case because they feel they have a stake in that case as well. I should mention that the defendants in all of these cases are the same. They're the former Governor Schwarzenegger and the state of California. The third case has also been filed in Southern California, and it's been filed by the parents and some organizations on behalf of the parents of the students that are receiving these services, and they are alleging that the governor had no power to suspend the mandate. They don't care who provides the services or who pays for them. They just want the services provided. And then additionally, there are a number of administrative proceedings at a lower level where individual students are bringing claims against school districts to get these services provided based on their due process rights that they're alleging that you can't just stop the services without giving them a due process right to continued services. That is the Reader Digest version of some very complicated litigation that has its overlay of what's occurring in each county with school districts, with SELPAs that are people are out there trying to resolve the situation while the litigation is moving forward. So.
And I would just finish up in terms of why we're recommending option two gets us through the year. SELPA stepped up to do the funding. We can continue the funding without any problems to the end of the year. And then because of the governor's budget's coming out Monday, we're going to have a mountain of problems above and beyond what we have here. And what I'd like to do as your county administrator was to sort through all of those issues along, throw this into the mix as well, and then come back to your board with a recommended budget later in the year that deals with as many of the issues we can and brings forward some policy issues your board will want to certainly take up and talk about.
Thank you. Let me go to board member questions, if I could. Supervisor Gibson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Neal, is there any sense of the timetable on resolution of these lawsuits?
The case filed by the school districts in Southern California, they have asked for that to be expedited. The case up in Sacramento with the school districts now intervening, there are some hearings coming up in January, and they're also going to be asking the court to expedite a ruling. One of the concerns is we could get independent rulings from the different courts which give us different direction, and so we could end up at the appellate level sooner rather than later, but everybody is asking at this point for the cases to be expedited.
And is there anything driving this? I mean, is there any looming timelines that would compel expedited action, or is this just lost in the morass there?
Probably lost in the morass. I mean, obviously the overriding concern here is the services and who has to provide them. And again, I think probably the students at this point in time that are receiving the services and those parents are most pushing the timeline.
Could you back up just a little bit, Rita? I don't know why.
Does that answer your question?
Yes. And to admin, Mr. Grant, as I read the staff report, and we go back to Mr. O'Quest's slide, it looks like we're actually on the hook in the group home part of this for more than we budgeted for because of the increased utilization, and that's appropriate. I mean, we have to take care of this at this point. And that's to the tune of some $87,000. Is that about right?
Jeff?
I believe that's correct. Social services budgeted for the year based on their expected number of placements for group homes, and each year it's a bit of a guess as to how many we're actually going to have. This year we did have more placements than we expected at the beginning of the year. We actually had four in place. We're down to three. Social services does project at this point that and they believe that they will have sufficient salary savings and unanticipated revenue and other expenditure savings that they can cover the additional cost of that. This is something that comes up fairly regularly with this expenditure type, and it is something that we could cover.
Well, I do have my concerns about what we're going to hear when the state budget comes out, and this may be a tidal wave that washes this away. But I am also very concerned that these are among the most vulnerable individuals in our communities that need intensive care. I guess my take on this is that I'd like to make sure we are on this particular issue among all the other health and human services issues that will be affected. But as soon as we understand what potential implications of the state budget are, I'd like to be back here talking about what we can do, if anything, to help these services continue.
Thank you. Supervisor Patterson.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm prepared to support staff's recommendation. I appreciate the fact that they've given us some options here. Also, the fact that SELPA stepped up really to backfill what the state has taken away. So we're basically in a status quo position, even though the state, former Governor Schwarzenegger has repealed AB 3632 and eliminated funding. SELPA stepped up to provide that funding. Also, I see Lee Collins is here, and DSS has really taken on the responsibility of placing these individuals in group homes, which, as I understand it, SELPA will potentially take that on in the future. I'm just curious to know, Mr. O'Quest, if SELPA is in concurrence with the recommendation that staff's making, that they have indeed agreed to take on that responsibility and to backfill the funding that we have lost due to the governor's action. I also, pending the outcome of the lawsuit, there's also potential legislation that will right this situation that may be coming forth too. So I think maintaining status quo through the end of this fiscal year would hopefully give us resolution to the lawsuits and also allow us time to see if any legislation is going to come forward so we can deal with it on a more complete manner with our fiscal year 11-12 budget.
Thank you. Supervisor DeSheriff?
I have that one question relative to SELPA.
I'll go ahead and respond to the question about SELPA's willingness to cover those. Specifically, for the mental health services, there's a contract that's already been drafted and attached to the staff report, and they have committed to covering those costs. Conversations have also been held with regard to the group home placement question. A draft of a possible contract, if your board should choose to go with option two, has been worked out. However, Jill Hoyer, the SELPA director, is here, and she can speak directly to their willingness and ability to participate in that, if you wish.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. DeShera?
Thank you, Chairman Hill. A couple questions I had. Supervisor Patterson and Supervisor Gibson both addressed a couple of things. Thank you. One, the care of these people, and other, to
the work that staff has done in option two looks like the best for now. My question is, once we get through this transition period and we get to the end of the year, are we looking at spending the money and possibly getting reimbursed on this down the road, or is this money just going to go away, which I have no problem either way, just kind of like to know.
At this point in time, we don't know if the state will bring back this this particular mandate. If the lawsuits are successful and we may get the mandate, we may get the reimbursement back. If they're not, we may not get the reimbursement, and the mandate would be suspended, and the county wouldn't have to do this particular work.
My other concern is with some of the campaign promises by Governor Brown about bringing a lot of this back to the counties and the cities for their participation. We're going to see more and more of this as time goes on and end up with more of these programs in our lap.
Yeah, and I think what Governor Brown is, and we don't know this yet until we see the actual budget, but I would believe that he would bring dollars with the mandate, unlike this particular item where there is no dollars and the mandate is still, even though the mandate's been suspended, we're still looking at a potential mandate.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Meacham.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I, too, like my colleagues, are anxiously anticipating what the state's going to do with the governor's budget, and I think that we're going to be needing to prepare ourselves for ongoing cuts in some of these services. I guess one of the questions I have, Jeff, is, and I spoke to you briefly about this, on the contract between Mental Health Services and CELPA, the service descriptions and how the unit rates are described, they're paid by the minute. I've never seen that before. And if you look at something like medication support services, $4.82 a minute, that equates to almost $400 an hour. That's like a lawyer. So I just have never seen anything like this. And I'm curious as to why we do that.
I believe it's fairly standard to set the rates in terms of minutes. According to Medi-Cal, those are Medi-Cal rates, and those are set by the state.
But this contract is a not to exceed contract.
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you.
I'll make the motion.
Okay. Well, let me open up to the public first, and there are no requests to speak on this item, so I'll close it to the public and Mr. Patterson for a motion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll move that we adopt staff's recommendation for option two, maintaining the current level of participation, and then await the outcome of the legal challenges and legislation pending relative to AB 3632.
And we're approving the contract as well?
Yes.
Okay. Second.
Mr. Patterson's motion, Mr. Teixeira seconds. Any further discussion? Roll call vote, please.
Mr. Patterson.
Aye.
Mr. Teixeira.
Aye.
Mr. Meacham.
Aye.
Mr. Gibson.
Yes.
Mr. Hill.
Yes. Okay, moving on. I'm only an hour behind. I'm feeling really good, so that means we're going to talk really fast. I see our very fast-speaking clerk recorder getting ready, so we will have Madam Clerk introduce the next item, if you would, please.
All right, here we go. That'll be item E1. Consideration of a report notifying the Board of Changes to the County Clerk Recorder's status on as a U.S. Passport Acceptance Agency. Receive, recommend item be received and filed.
Thank you. Ms. Rodewald.
Okay, I'll talk really, really fast.
All right.
County Clerk Recorder Julie Rodewald. Hopefully the PowerPoint will come up here. Whoops, hang on.
All right, there we go.
So I just wanted to give you a brief history background on our decision to no longer be passport acceptance agents. In San Luis Obispo County, the county clerk recorder has been accepting applications since at least 1982, and in essence, we were the only game in town for a very long time. And at the height of that activity, we were processing 6,000 applications a year for about $185,000 in fees being collected. But several things happened. After 9/11, we had less travel, and the Passport Agency Department of State is issued a directive that all citizens traveling outside the country now needed passports instead of just birth certificates for travel to Mexico and Canada, and they urged other agencies to become passport acceptance agents, which several of our post offices did. So in 2004, our volume dropped to about 3,300 applications, which was 40%. Last year, our volume was 63% of what we processed in 2003. We're processing just over 2,000 applications. At the same time all this was happening, we started having what I'll term issues with the Department of State. They were requiring more and more restrictions and requirements on passports. We didn't have an objection with those restrictions or requirements, but they were causing more time for each application that we were processing. And in conjunction with that, they decreased the acceptance agent's fee by 16% from $30 to $25. And in essence, the county now was subsidizing the program. We were bringing in about $60,000 worth of revenue and spending $70,000 worth of staff and other costs. Their most recent directive puts us in the position of having conflicting duties. They said that any agency that issues birth certificates, which we as the recorder are mandated to do, if they're going to continue as a passport acceptance agent, they must segregate staff and restrict access to not only the birth certificates themselves, but the paper on which we print them. In reviewing that with staff, we determined it was too costly, and it would really diminish our service to all of our customers in order to do this. So we made the decision to stop accepting applications effective February 1st of 2011, which is less than 30 days. So what's the impact to our fiscal and staffing situation? Currently, we have $20,000 in budgeted revenue, which we won't be realizing for the remainder of this year, which we will be able to make up with other revenue. Annually, as I said, we get $60,000 in revenue, and we spend $70,000 in staff and other costs. In terms of our staffing, we've already reduced one full-time position in the 10-11 budget. We have another position that we've left vacant to determine what's going to happen with this year's budget. That position will either be reassigned to other duties if we have the revenue, or it will be eliminated permanently. So what are our options for customers, which is a big issue for me? Several post offices do the passport acceptance. They are also acceptance agents. Arroyo Grande, San Luis Obispo, at Delidio, Morro Bay, Atascadero, and Cambria. Of those, Cambria has the most extensive hours between Monday through Friday. The rest are fairly limited hours that they offer the services. Santa Maria and Pismo Beach post offices also do them Monday through Friday, and they have Saturday hours. Pismo Beach City Clerk has fairly regular hours during the Monday through Friday, and there's actually a lot of information at the Department of State's website, travel.state.gov. People can find locations there. They can also find applications and fill out the application online for printing. Our next steps, we'll be sending a letter today to the U.S. Department of State. We'll be notifying our congressional offices, who we work very closely with, as well as the post offices, and encouraging the Department of State to encourage the post offices to expand their hours and their locations. We'll be sending out public notifications to the travel agents, updating our website information, our phone information, and sending out press releases. I spoke with Supervisor Gibson yesterday, and he suggested contacting the libraries, which I've spoken with Brian Reynolds about getting out the information to them about the travel.state.gov so that they can assist people who come into the library to print out applications. And that's my report. If you have any questions, let me know.
Thank you very much. That was excellent. I see no board member questions because it was so informative. So I'll open this to the public. I see no have no requests from the public. So I'll bring it back to the board again for more information. It's posted on both our clerk's website and also on the state's website, and just start to get into the habit of knowing that you're going to go to your post office rather than to your clerk recorders for your passport. Mr. Meacham.
Just quickly, that annual report that was just put out, if you go to that site, would that reflect this change?
We took out passports from that site, yes.
Perfect. Thank you very much, Mrs. Rodewell. This is a receive and file, so we'll have done that. And we're buzzing along now to try to catch up with time. Madam Clerk, would you introduce the next item, please?
That would be item F1, a request to receive and file the Parks and Recreation Annual Report and to consider related priorities, goals, and projects.
Thank you. And I see our Deputy Director for Parks and also our Mr. Cooper, who's... Mr. Black, are you going to kick this off?
Yes, I am. Thank you very much, Deputy Director for County Parks, Curtis Black. And with us today is our Parks and Recreation Commissioner Chair and Commissioner Nash Carner as well. We're going to present your Park and Recreation Commission's annual report for 2010. Our report notes the progress on high priority tasks, and we'll get another slide there. There we go. Progress on high priority tasks that were presented to the board in December 2009, recommendations for board actions and projects, goals, and priorities for 2011, and we've included this year some long-term goals. Just having a little trouble with the... Okay. In December 2009, the board supported our three highest priority projects. As noted in the report, they were, number one, the needs assessment for park and recreation services. As noted in the park and recreation element, our commissioners and county parks see that this assessment is an essential step in preparing a spending plan for our services to the county. This assessment will compare services for similar communities, regional park systems, provide levels of service for recreational amenities per population, and determine recreational needs per community. Essentially, it will create a roadmap for future spending. Our progress last year included we created a request for proposals to seek a consultant for this project that has been estimated a $200,000 cost. We sought funding through an environmental justice grant in the spring of 2010. Unfortunately, in fall, we were told that that was an unsuccessful application. We've been pursuing additional funding, preparing for a Proposition 84 regional planning grant that would be available this spring, 2011. Second priority was our priority projects list. It's noted in Exhibit A, and it includes 23 projects that have ranged from grant applications to acquisition partnerships and construction. Significant progress was made on our outstanding trail offers to accept easements. We brought three separate reports to your board, and over two dozen easements have been accepted into the inventory countywide. It is noted that this is one way in which the county may work towards your park and recreation element goal of having 3 acres of parkland per 1,000 residents. In our number three priority was alternative funding sources. And while only nominal progress was made towards this goal, as a lot of the data we had hoped to use for this was to be produced during the needs assessment consultant work. We were able to pursue your board's direction with planning department, to study adding visitor-serving retail to our public facilities fee ordinances for parks. That study is funded in the 2010-11 operating budget, and we're working with planning department toward its completion. Your board will see the results of that report further along in 2011. Our fourth priority was to enhance partnerships, and county parks and commissioners, park and recreation commissioners, have increased our communications and partnerships with San Luis Obispo County communities. As noted in your report, dozens of meetings have taken place on topics from parkland development, an aquatic center, trails throughout the county, and many more topics. That being said, both commissioners and county parks see this as an area of continued priority. We've got one more.
Okay. We do have long-term goals that have been listed in the report. These are goals that should be well known to most of our board members. A number of conversations have revolved around whether county parks ought to be a division department of General Services Agency or a standalone department. Also under consideration has been whether we should have some sort of a regional recreation and park council or agency. Possibility of creating recreation programming funds, some sort of a benefits district or such. And ongoing, adding concessionaires or vendors in various locations to help increase both revenue and services to the public. These final three long-term goals are also included in the report to continue exploring alternative funding sources. As you note in some of the recommendations, funding, and of course, countywide, but in county parks especially, is getting tighter as the economy is just starting to come back up. We need to improve our reservation systems. You're aware that we had a concerted effort started approximately 3 years ago to create a substantial reservation system that would have provided point of sales services and online reservations. That system failed. That contract was canceled. And we're left with quite a debt that we need to work through, and then we still need to improve our reservation system. And enhancing our marketing efforts is certainly an effort that we need to undertake to try to generate additional revenues. This being said, we have four recommendations before the board today from the Park and Rec Commission. And number one is to complete your parks and recreation needs assessment. The second recommendation is to pursue the goal of 3 acres of parkland per 1,000 population, and in accordance with that goal, to continue inventorying and mapping our easements previously received through outstanding trail offers. The third recommendation is that we investigate alternative funding, and that Parks and Recreation Commission recommends that the county not further reduce Parks General Fund support. And the fourth recommendation is to develop ongoing community relations programs to gain support for Parks and Recreation, enhancing our strategic partnerships. The financial considerations are significant in that the alternative number one for the needs assessment has an approximate cost of $200,000. We do have that Prop 84 application for a grant opportunity this spring. The previous similar release, 90% of the applications were not successful. We feel we have a very strong application, but I'm sure that 9 out of 10 people do feel that way. It is the commission's desire that we pursue that and with general fund monies or any other resource that may be available. The second recommendation that could impact us financially would be that third one, which would state to not consider further reductions to general fund support. As stated, the commission would suggest that we would be exempted from submitting the 5% cut budget. I believe the administrative office has another alternative there that they might want to provide additional detail to, but I believe it essentially would have county parks provide supplemental budget papers that would note what services and what additional funding would be needed to maintain the existing service levels. That concludes our report, and I believe our chair and our Commissioner Nash Carner would like to speak, whether that be now or during question and answer.
We'll hold off for a second if we could, Mr. Black, and see if there's any board questions.
I do have a question, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Supervisor Patterson?
Yes, Mr. Black, I'm curious. regarding your second goal, and that is something that, you know, we've been striving for forever, and it serves as a benchmark of how our communities rate in terms of park space. But in your recommendation to reach that goal of 3 acres of parkland per 1,000 population in the unincorporated communities, I'm curious to know that a lot of the park facilities, or since a lot of the park facilities are actually located beyond the boundaries of individual communities, do you consider that parkland as well in making that determination of 3 acres per 1,000 in population? How do you arrive at that? Because so much of our recreational parkland is really outside of communities, whether they be incorporated cities or the unincorporated communities that we manage. How do you define that benchmark?
Well, that's a good point, and the goal in our park and rec element is in the broader terms. It is in the acres of parkland per 1,000 population for the county. The commission would like that further pressed to the community level, and that would be one of the data points that we'd certainly be seeking out of a needs assessment. But it could be generated with some of our staff time. It is important to each of those communities that they have some parkland close to the residents. The regional parkland serves all and a lot of visitors to the county. But it should be measured both ways. That's part of the reason for having a needs assessment.
Thank you.
Thank you. Supervisor Meacham.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Along the same lines, Mr. Black, have we done any type of analysis to say what the deferred maintenance cost would be relative to accomplishing this general plan goal? I mean, if we go with 3 acres of parkland per 1,000 population, what's that going to cost us in terms of maintenance and ongoing operation?
No. To answer directly, no, we haven't done that analysis. That is an important analysis to make. We need to see what the gap is, current to proposed, and the types of parklands, of course, have varying costs per acre as well. With 14,000 acres of parkland, nearly 14,000 acres, only somewhat over 400 acres is intensely managed, intensely developed. So the condition of that parkland, for instance, the 80 acres in Liz Duvenek Memorial Park has yet to really cost us any significant amount. If we begin to place the trails, restrooms, some support facilities there, then we get the operating costs and infrastructure costs.
This kind of goes along with what I've mentioned before in terms of deferred maintenance costs on our public facilities, that at some point we're going to have to engage in that discussion. It'll probably not be pleasant, but it's one that we're going to have to face reality in the long term. Secondly, in regard to the public facility or the park facilities fund, how much money is in this fund currently?
Currently, the parks portion of the public facilities fund is in the order of $1.4 million.
Okay.
And then of undesignated funds.
Okay. And then the final point I wanted to make was that I read over all of the different on your Exhibit A and Exhibit B, the disproportionate numbers relative to districts. I think we ought to find a better way to make this a little bit more even. I mean, if you look at this, okay. I'm not being critical here, but when
not when, a lot of ones to five.
When district two has 21 of these items listed, district one has four, there's a little bit of disproportionality there. And so I want to look at the fairness in regard to allocating funding to the different districts.
And to that, I'd say your Park and Recreation Commission and your county parks staff are also sensitive to that. And quite honestly, I'm certain that these are important projects. They have come before the commission and the board in previous years, and they've been pursued because they're important in various ways, either regionally or to the specific community. That being said, We simply need to get us a quality strategic plan, a roadmap for where the spending will occur, what the needs are, and what levels of service are existing, what levels of service should be provided. It may be that per 3,000 residents, we should have at least one multipurpose sports field. That community that doesn't have a multipurpose sports field may want a swimming pool. They may not, you know, we need to go out and collect the information, compare it against regional agencies, similar agencies, and begin to make a plan that says, here's where we are, here's where we want to go.
Okay. And I passed out to my colleagues, I got an email from my appointed Parks Commissioner, and she mentioned in here that one of the questions that has been raised is about how we have spent the grant application process, how many of these applications have been fruitful, the cost relative to this, and she said that staff was going to be preparing that information and providing it in January at their meeting. So I guess I'm wondering, are we premature in making a determination on this report today until we find out all the particulars here?
Well, I have read that email, and I've made a few notes. One of the items that was of interest was how many of these applications have been fruitful. So staff did add to your Exhibit A a column that is for status, because a number of the significant projects completed have been grant applications. They do take a good bit of staff time and some community time as well. Interest from nonprofits, residents, people who attend these meetings. So we have included that in follow-up of our December meeting with Parks and Rec Commission. But we did commit to have an additional report that our senior planner, Mr. Cooper, will provide. And he'll note the estimated percentage of our park planner's time that is consumed in doing grant applications, understanding they vary greatly one to another.
And my final, just a quick question in regard to the assessment that we are looking to accomplish here, the needs assessment. Is it absolutely imperative that we go outside to do this? I mean, it appears to me for that kind of money that we have the personnel, we've identified a lot of the things that we have as needs. I'm not quite sure why we couldn't do this in-house.
It isn't that we could not do it in-house. There's a cost to that. And one significant cost would be possibly losing traction on projects that are in process. Some of those projects that still require a good deal of attention and time, management, seeking additional funds, et cetera, are the Bob Jones Trail, the Cayucas to Morro Trail. There's a new one that's coming along, the North Counties Trail Plan. And a number of the smaller projects that we apply for grant funding that have been successful, Los Osos Playground and the Cal Boating Grants up at the lakes. So we would be making a trade of either accomplishing the needs assessment with staff time or accomplishing these other activities with staff time. The other benefit to having a consultant is that they have focused staff that have experience in creating surveys and conducting surveys, crunching the data, and have the connections within the industry to receive data nationwide and regionally, comparing us with other agencies. The consultant has an additional benefit in being an uninterested third party. Because as you create these plans, you find one community that is not given as high a priority status as another. And there will always be challenges. And the third-party status of an expert can help to reduce those numbers of challenges, and certainly is a way to defend the strong efforts that have been put forward.
Okay, Supervisor Gibson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And following up from Supervisor Meacham, I had the same question. And at $200,000, and I've heard that number for a while now, I'm wondering, what we're getting relative to what we're able to accomplish. And you know, one thought that resonates. Is this more than one full-time equivalent over the course of a year, which would seem to me that we could get for something more like half of, you know, fully loaded, something more like half of $200,000. I think admin's point of bringing this forward in the budget considerations is one that we have to take very seriously. We're going to have some very difficult decisions to make. We can set our priorities, and it is this board's responsibility to properly fund those things that we think are appropriate. And we appreciate the advocacy of the Parks and Rec Commission in bringing this forward, and Parks has, frankly, struggled for quite a long time. But I'm going back to what we are attempting to plan for. Our public facilities funds are $1.4 million. That's for capital acquisitions and improvements. And yet we know that our constraint is actually the operating and maintenance budgets that we don't have. So I guess I'm curious to know whether, within the information we have now, whether we are active in seeing that $1.4 million spent at this point, or are we looking at the landscape and saying, no, we really can't, for instance, open a park that's long planned in Cayucas, for instance. That's on hold because we know we don't have the operating budget. I mean, I'm curious as to what would happen tomorrow if the needs assessment landed on our desk right now. What would be going on in the Parks Division tomorrow?
We could be pursuing some work in county parks that appear, at least on the first year and a half's worth of service here, in my perspectives, to be underserved, not fully improved, and we would be pursuing partnerships. Either partnerships to help with that maintenance, or we would be looking to provide improvements that would help, could be met within our current operating funding. For instance, one of the ones that's come through several times, and a lot of information has been prepared for, a Prop 84 grant, could be PFF funded, would be San Miguel Parks expansion and improvement. Now, since we have staff there performing tasks, it doesn't cost a great deal extra to do a few more square yards of turf. Mm-hmm. If you replace and upgrade irrigation systems, they operate better and use less water, save some money.
That's sort of basically deferred maintenance. Is that something our PFF fund can fund at this point?
It would not be deferred maintenance in the extent that we would not replace an item with the same item. That I don't think is acceptable. An improvement, upgrade, enhancements, enlargements, those sorts of projects, I believe, can be funded well with PFF funds. It's not a infrastructure. Not like just go put another roof on an existing building, but to completely remove an irrigation system and create a new landscape and park plan and match an irrigation system to that new plan, I believe, is a suitable project.
So there might be, so what we're talking about is potential to work within existing facilities to essentially bring them up to where we want them to be. I mean, that was the grand jury's observation of some years ago. In looking at the other priority projects, I mean, in heading toward a suitable amount of acreage per thousand of population, my read of the staff report was that your acceptance of trail easements and the basically volunteer maintenance of them with minimal staff time seemed like a cost, your most likely approach at this point, given the constraints of the operating budget.
It's certainly one that is ripe for the picking. It's available now. We have the easement offers to consider, and we have a number of volunteer groups willing to provide that service.
And so I think in terms of direction from the board, that's an obvious one that we certainly want you to pursue. Alternate funding is either the pursuit of grants or the potential of a larger pursuit of a more stable funding base, which is a very big question. But going down to your fourth point, which was enhancing strategic partnerships, Is that something that the division intends to pursue in any case? I mean, is that within the work, the scope of work of the division's work plan right now?
It really is. It's part of what our daily life is in county parks. Whether it's our rangers that have park visitors and say, hey, how can I get involved to help? Or whether it's us visiting the either the advisory councils or the community groups, nonprofits, and saying, you know, we're here to provide service. Do we have some partnership here? Yeah.
That sounds more like friend-raising than fundraising, though. Is that?
It's right. Yeah, and it is an ongoing task. I suppose the Park and Rec Commission could speak to it more clearly or support that, but I think the effort is to make sure we provide the additional focus, that it is a recommendation that we increase our efforts there, that we partner with as many people as possible.
Well, Mr. Chairman, at a point, I think a deeper discussion, and I don't know if exactly today is the time to do that, on the necessity of the needs assessment and how it might be pursued, I think would be useful. We have a recently former park commissioner here who might want to weigh in on that. But, you know, I think we have to carry this. My own thought is we have to carry this forward into the budgeting process, understand it as the highest priority of the, you know, it's the top of the priority list on parks. It gets to the prioritization of projects by area, which addresses the equity issue that Mr. Meacham rightfully brings up. I would propose that it's looking like we tend in that direction.
Okay. Let's go to Mr. Teixeira.
Thank you, Supervisor or Chairman Hill. A couple things. First of all, I think this is something that we really need to do in order to get a better roadmap, like Mr. Black indicated, of where we want to be on county parks. We've used, and Parks Department, we've used consultants in the past. We used a consultant when we did the Parks and Rec element in the early part of the 2003, and we used it again when we did the report to the grand jury. They're very valuable people that you can use, and I think you need to pick the right one to use it. We've got a number of issues at parks, and we've got a number of parks that need to be finished and projects that need to be done. We won't know how to do these or where to do them unless we have the roadmap to lead us there. And I think that Supervisor Meacham brought up a very valid point in the fact of the maintenance. This has kind of been the stranglehold on parks for many years, is you can't build any parks and you can't do anything in parks until you've got the maintenance dollars to do it. Well, you know what? This is one of the biggest engines in the county is tourism, and we're part of that engine, and we need to address that. I can remember when we took over the Coastal Dunes project down in Oceano, they were afraid of whether we were going to make enough money to pay the bills. Well, I'll tell you right now, it was a moneymaker the first year, and it continues to be. But we need to spend some serious money down there, and there's other areas in the county where we need to spend serious money. And right now, with the economy the way it is and the downturn, we're seeing more and more visitors come into our parks because it's an economical place for people to recreate and for people to do things locally. And once the economy turns around and we've got a showcase that we can show them what we do at county parks and what we can do, I think this money will come back to us.
Good.
Question for Mr. Teixeira, if I might, yes. Mr. Chair, and that is whether the commission has really looked at whether the amount, the $200,000, is that, are we talking bare bones there? Is there something we can do for less than that amount of money?
I would think that there would be something less that you could do, and Mr. Black would be the one to talk about that. What I would like to see is them hire a consultant to work with county staff, like we have in the past on some of our projects, and then hire some part-time Cal Poly graduates, park people like that, to put this whole thing together and get a view from different people to look at the project.
Thank you.
Okay. Supervisor Patterson?
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you, Supervisor Hill. I appreciate Mr. Teixeira's insight, having served on the Parks Commission for so many years. I'm curious to know, well, I want to preface my comments with the fact that this needs assessment was identified in the Parks and Rec element, which we adopted back in 2006. So it's been on the list for the last 4 years as something that we need to do. And it concerns me that 4 years have passed and we haven't done that yet. And I would really like to find a way to get that done, because it does provide the priorities that we need, that we're constantly looking for. Where should we invest our parks money? And that needs assessment will give us that list of priorities to better enable us to invest it appropriately. And I'm curious to know, Mr. Black, if the parks facility fees would, I think there was some question about whether or not we could use that money to actually conduct a needs assessment. At one point, it was thought that we could, and then I've heard that we couldn't, so there's been some debate on whether or not we could justifiably use that money, and I'm curious to know if that's
your memory is correct. Since I've been here in fall of 2009, we had assumed that we would use some PFF money, possibly some operating money to our general fund, another source, and partner that monies together. In discussion with County Council and administration review, it was determined that our particular ordinance here in the county would not allow the use of PFF or Quimby funds for this particular assessment, not resulting in any specific projects or plan for a specific site for projects. So that was a setback, and that's where we began to seek the grants. We went for the environmental justice one. Yeah.
Right. I know we've applied for grants to do that and have been unsuccessful, and I hate to rely on grants to get this done at this point. I don't want to delay it any further than we absolutely have to. I want to find a way to get that needs assessment completed, whether we do it partially in-house with the consultant. You know, let's and again, my colleagues' concerns about the forthcoming budget discussions relative to everything else the county does. Perhaps we put it in that context, but again, I want to come out of that process with a way of either funding a consultant to do that needs assessment or a way that we can do it in-house or with a hybrid, as Mr. Teixeira has suggested. So it's a priority from our Parks Commission. It's a priority from our Parks and Rec element. It should become a priority for us. Let's find a way to get it done.
Well, let's hear from some of our Parks Commission. The chair, Mr. Hilton, will open this up to public comment, and Pandora Nash Carner will follow. And Bruce, if you would fill out one of these slips before you leave today.
Okay.
That would be helpful.
That's the legal way.
Or we won't consider your comments.
No. Bruce Hilton, Parks Commission Chair. Mr. Chair, members of the board, thank you for this opportunity today to present our annual report and come to you with some of our requests. It's encouraging to hear your questions and comments. I can tell that you get it and you understand the issues and the value and importance of parks. And, of course, it's great to see my former colleague, Mr. Supervisor now, Teixeira, up there and be able to hear his insight and his valuable experience with parks. I do want to add to Mr. Black's response to some of your questions. And I think, you know, Mr. Meacham's question about, Supervisor Meacham's question about cost of added parkland, I think it is critical to identify that the needs assessment is part of that answer. It's saying here's what the county needs, and then it should also answer here's how to fund it. So, you know, the question about trails was great. If they identify trails in the needs assessment, then perhaps through volunteer efforts and existing staff we can address those. If they, you know, say a recreational facility, then we really do have to take a serious look at what would that cost, and do we fund that with visitor fees, or is it possible? And the needs assessment should really answer that question too, which leads into why I think it's so important to have a consultant that has experience in these things. If they say a recreation facility, then hopefully they have the answers, and picking this consultant will be very critical. I'd just like to remind you also that with the Parks and Rec element, the board first gave direction in 1993, and consultant was at, you know, staff started that process, a consultant was added. It was done in 2006. I really don't think we can afford that, you know, another 13-year process. That's my concern with trying to do something in-house. as well as Mr. Black mentioned, impact on existing projects. To echo Supervisor Teixeira's comments, you know, and of course his insight, is that parks is an investment. It's an economic engine. It's an investment in our community. And the comments about maintenance are the ones that concern me the most, is that we can't, I don't think it's acceptable to say, well, we just can't do it. We don't know where the maintenance money is coming from. We have to invest. We have to invest in a needs assessment that will say this is what we need to do for our community and this is how we'll fund it. So we really are at a critical time where we need to move forward. That's why we're here today. That's why we're presenting this annual report. We've enjoyed your support in the past. I know Supervisor Patterson about 5 years ago was critical in adding operational funding to the budget. As recent as our last quarterly report says, he's going camping to help support us. So we appreciate that support, and that's why we're here today, is we strongly believe this is a critical time, and we need, this is a time where we need your support. So I just want to be clear about the two items that we're asking for. One is the general fund support, and as I've mentioned, we're at a point where staff is able to really communicate the impact of these reductions. We've had two budgets now where we've taken a 5% reduction, and you know, it's one thing to say, well, we'll put another nail in the bench that's fallen apart, or you know, it's just not at that point anymore. It's where we're seeing declines in visitor revenue. It's important to note that the graph in the report indicates increased visitor revenue. That was based on a time when we did have increased revenue. So,
okay, Bruce, we're going to need you to go to point two because you're headed towards the four-minute mark.
Okay. All right. Just to sum up then, we really can't take further reduction in general fund support, and we would really appreciate your support of the needs assessment. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Nash-Carner, followed by Eric Green.
Honorable board members, Happy New Year. And Mr. Teixeira, Supervisor Teixeira, it's nice to see you there. Just to bring you kind of an overview, the park and rec element was a study that started and stopped several times, and the last major effort was in the early 2000s, and it was a combination of staff and consultants. Jan DeLeo worked on that heavily, along with, I believe, Sean may have done some, and then there were some consultants and some part-time people that brought in. We went out to the communities, and we surveyed the communities and had various meetings throughout the county. They were very, very successful. So the park and rec element gave us our marching orders. The needs assessment addresses the priorities and defines the very specific places and the very specific things that need to be done throughout the county. And, yes, we need your support to get it done. I've said for years parks are more than just Johnny and Susie needing a swing set. It's an economic engine for the county. It increases property values. It stimulates volunteers. It provides job trainings for the youth. It fosters strong sense of community. It attracts new businesses. It retains employees. It also reduces health costs, incarceration rates, and juvenile crime rates. All of this is proven. So it's not just about swing sets, and it's not irrelevant. It's really important, and we need your help. So you've heard enough about the needs assessment. I think there's a number of ways to approach it, but we do need to get it done. We can't wait for grants. It's going to be another 2, 3, 4 years before we're going to be successful that way. We need to be ready so that when the economy turns around, we not only can build, but we can find the maintenance money to continue these projects. The second area is, like every other department and division within the county, we're asking you, please don't cut. We are a revenue-generating division, unlike any other division within the county other than taxes and fines and fees. We can bring money into the county in a very positive way. Just for instance, if you don't cut our fees, we may actually be able to go buy an off-the-shelf reservation system that will be web-ready by summer that would not only save staff time, potentially a full-time staff person, but would also generate additional revenue. There are a number of things that we can do, but we need the funding in order to do it. On the partnership news, I have some really good news on the coast. It looks like we have a strong partnership now with Coastal Unified School District, the City of Morro Bay, a couple of nonprofits, and the county to finally move forward board on a community, actually a region-wide aquatic center. We've identified the land. We have money that's been set aside now to hire the grant writer to write grants, and we think we are absolutely in the right place to receive about $5 million of Prop 84 money. We're meeting with the grant writer tomorrow. So partnerships are underway, and they're not just friendships, partnerships, but they're really true strategic partnerships that could create a lot of benefits for the county. Again, we thank you for your support, and we need to ask if you would please continue it. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Greening.
Thank you. I am Eric Greening, and think it's an excellent report. Just following up on a few ideas. One is this idea of a recreation council or parks and recreation council. We should decide which it is. They're not synonymous. Parklands both serve a recreational need for a people. They are also habitat. They are sites of sequestration and could potentially be more effective sites of sequestration. They could be sites of vegetation, regeneration of natural vegetation and woodlands. And to the extent that they do that, they can meet climate action plan goals, perhaps acquire other sources of funding based on meeting those goals. So if we're going to generate a council, let's have it look at the total picture, not just human needs, but habitat and climate. Relative to operational costs being looked at as a deterrent to the capital acquisitions, I think it's always good to look ahead at operational needs because they're usually the weak point. But I am tired of the double standard. Why don't we do that with something like the Willow Road Interchange? We are aggressively seeking capital funding to build something we know very well is going to have huge ongoing maintenance costs for that degree of pavement. Somehow that never comes up when we're talking about something for the automobile. But when it's for people or wildlife, when it's for children, suddenly it comes up and it stops us in our tracks. I think we need to be aware of that habit of mind because we're going to have to get over it if we're serious about climate action. And finally, I wanted to second the point Mr. Meacham made about regional equity. People in the interior have needs as well. And I'm not in any way downplaying the importance of preserving the coast, but let's remember that in addition to the county's facilities there, all of our state parks are within the coastal zone. The only one that isn't actually on the coast is the Los Osos Oaks Reserve, but even that's in the coastal zone. So we already have a tremendous inventory there. We may have to struggle to keep them open, but in the meantime, people in the interior have genuine needs, and particularly people in the interior who don't drive. Try getting from Atascadero to the coast by public transit or using a bicycle on Highway 41, and you'll see what I mean. So let's not forget that most of our people in this county are not living in the coastal zone and have needs, and some of them live in places where it gets very hot and have needs. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Greening. I will close public comment and bring it back to the board. And before I go to my colleagues, I just wanted to say a few things, too, since I haven't actually spoken on this yet. And I found my new colleague, Supervisor Teixeira's comments to be convincing, as well as his former colleagues, Mr. Hilton and Ms. Nash-Carner, which is that we need to find a way to follow through on our commitment to parks. We need to do a needs assessment. We need to. I don't think we want to get into a position where just because we have some budget challenges that we stop doing what we need to do to improve and enhance the community. I think this is not just important as a tourist part of what this brings to our county, but important, critically important to our residents, and increasingly will be important to our residents as we implement some of our land use policies. So I think that I also am very sensitive to the concerns expressed by Mr. Grant and his staff about putting this into the budget process. Otherwise, we're likely to see a lot of other departments or parts of departments come forward with things that need to be done meeting by meeting as well, and not necessarily
not necessarily the best way to approach it, I guess. But I do think that we that parks, in some ways, just get overlooked. We take them for granted, and I don't think we can afford to do that. And I think we need to find a way. And you know, talking about how to do it best and how to do it most cost efficiently, I think this is all valuable. But I do think we need to not just keep putting this off. So with that, I will go to my colleague, Supervisor Gibson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Following up on the, again, as I said before, I think it's right that we get to the budget process on this. But in terms of board direction today, I think we should ask our admin staff to work with the Parks Division to provide us the options of how to get this needs assessment done at perhaps a number less than $200,000, if there are options there. And in hearing the testimony of the Parks Commissioners in particular, where they reference the importance of parks to the economy, which is an idea that I've heard before, and also particularly to the tourist economy, I wonder if part of that discussion on options would be to make contact with the Visitors Conference Bureau, and in particularly the Tourist BID, the Tourist Business Improvement District that was formed, that is generating money and that perhaps would see an investment in a needs assessment as something that would be helpful. Similarly, as a general economic engine for the county, the EVC and its recent analysis, I think, are partners that we might want to bring into this. And if we can make real that connection or make manifest, you know, make it obvious that connection to our economic well-being is there, perhaps we have some help that will get us over the hurdle on this. Finally, I'd just like to note on a separate topic, this is the report from the Parks and Rec Commission on accomplishments as well, and I'd like to thank Parks Division and the commissioners for their hard work in getting things done in an extraordinarily difficult time. And we have had some successes, small perhaps, but significant, between Parks Division, the Commission, and importantly, volunteers. We have new dog parks, we have new restrooms, we have things in other districts, I'm sure. So just make sure we don't dwell too negatively on the challenges without celebrating the accomplishments.
Thank you. Supervisor Patterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think it's been made clear among my colleagues that we want to get this needs assessment done, and we're asking Parks and Admin to find a way to make that happen. And I'm curious to know, Mr. Black, have we formulated an RFP yet? Did we have any kind of sense of feedback from consultants that may do some work like we need to have done to come up with that $200,000 estimated cost?
Yes, we have completed an RFP. We did not put it on the street because we didn't have funding. We didn't feel it was fair to the consultants to have them produce those documents without any possibility of having a project. The costs are placed really. The first time a needs assessment was funded was for about $100,000 in 2007-08, I believe it was. Now, the economy was beginning to decline, park revenues were declining, the budget crunch came, and so that was removed before the end of that year. It was not completed. So at that point, it was estimated at $100,000. In previous occupation, we completed the needs assessment for a smaller agency, and it was $217,000. And that would have been in year 7-8 or into 8-9, it was finally finished. So I had increased that estimate up, and in meantime have contacted a few consultants, not with all of the details, but just to get a feel, is that a reasonable amount? And they felt like it could be scaled to that amount. It would have to be through proposals and then a final contract.
So you think that is a realistic amount, and that's what we ought to be focusing on?
It is a realistic amount if we limit the staff time to producing documents of record, background information, and partnering with the consultant to provide the public meetings and to, you know, edit reports and such. As has been said here before, the more we invest staff time, we would see a corresponding decline in the consultants.
Okay. Thank you for that. I just want to conclude my remarks by thanking members of the Parks and Rec Commission for their work on this, for your persistence in bringing this forward. And it would be my hope that we have a consensus here that we need to continue to move that needs assessment project forward. It sounds to me as though we do. Of the other issues that were mentioned, I think it's absolutely essential that we continue to market our park facilities here in San Luis Obispo County. We have stellar facilities that are, in my mind, underutilized simply because people don't know about them. Also, as mentioned, I think that it is essential that we develop our strategic partnerships, both with other agencies. We know that State Parks has taken a hit. Maybe we can work together to help keep some of their facilities open, and they likewise can help us. And so it's not only public partnerships, but other agency partnerships that we need to be considering as well, including our cities. So it is my desire to, again, echo Supervisor Gibson's comments to admin, for admin and parks to come up with a way to get this needs assessment funded and underway.
Thank you. Supervisor Meacham.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll be brief. Just a couple of things. I really like Supervisor Gibson's point about reaching out to folks like the EDC and the BIT to see if there's a possibility of a partnership arrangement there to seek funding for this needs assessment. I guess the one thing that I'm not clear on, and I apologize if I have been provided this, is exactly what the specifics are of a needs assessment. I don't know what that is. And so I'd like to be able to see something along those lines. And just for my colleagues' information, but one thing that I've been working with Mr. Black as well is with the community of Templeton, for example, is to have them take over that park and take over that swimming pool. It sits right next to their CSD building. It makes more sense for them to control that. That would relieve the county of our need to take care of something like that, and it would allow for them to control the cost relative to the use of that park. So that might limit a little bit of cost there.
Okay. All right. We're looking for motion staff direction here as time is ticking through.
I think our discussion has provided staff adequate direction.
Okay. Do we feel?
Would ask whether that's the case.
I have adequate direction in terms of working with parks in trying to determine a funding source for a needs assessment. I'm just thinking that your board right here is not interested in at this point in time, and that you'll put it into the budget discussions, the reduction for parks, which we're asking everybody, all departments, to submit reduction budgets to us for this next fiscal year.
Mr. Meacham?
Well, and along those lines, I think that this needs to be part of that discussion, but I agree with Mr. Hilton. This doesn't need to take another 13 years to get done. So if we can be more specific in exactly where we're going with this needs assessment, nail down the dollars in this, then I'd be very supportive of that.
My thought there are options in terms of scaling the size of the needs assessment,
right,
the amount of staff versus other time, and all part of the budget discussion. With that, the rest of what I see in recommendations are receiving file here. So.
Okay. Voice vote. Those in favor of the direction and recommendations we've made to staff? Aye.
Aye.
Okay. All right. We have two more items. How quickly can we get C1 done from our public works friends? Where are they? Or who's handling this? I see Mr. Chapman moving towards the.
Thank you.
All right, let's go for it then.
Oh, yeah.
10 minutes. I trust this guy.
I'll set the timer.
All right. Madam Clerk, if you would introduce the next item, please.
I'll do a brief introduction.
Thank you.
This is a hearing to consider the annual road improvement fees reports for the fee areas of Avila, Los Osos, South County, Templeton, North Coast, and San Miguel, and resolutions to continue the fees, and a resolution to discontinue the San Luis Obispo fringe area fee. Thank you. Recommend approval and instruct chairperson to sign.
Okay. Mr. Chapman, are you presenting?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm Ryan Chapman with the Public Works Department, and I'm here to present the road improvement fee update. The purpose of the program is to identify the cumulative impacts and mitigations associated with development in a community and to develop a capital improvement program and establish improvement fees based on that program. In the North County, we have three fee areas, North Coast, San Miguel, and Templeton. And the account info for the 2010 fiscal year is presented on this table. The fees are presented in this table, and we are not proposing any change to those fees. Headed in the North County, there were two appeals. One was in March to the Templeton Area B fee, and it was a reduction. The second appeal was May in Templeton Area C, and it was determined that the fee was not necessary. In the South County, we have four fee areas, Los Osos, Avila, the South County, and San Luis Obispo Fringe. The account data is presented here. And this is the fee table. We are, again, not recommending any changes except in the San Luis Obispo Fringe area. The road impact fee projects we've been working on, we've recently completed a traffic signal at Los Osos Valley Road and Palisades. We are working on the Willow Road extension. We are in project development for Halcyon Road at Highway 1 and intersection improvements. And we are performing an operational study for the Main Street interchange intersection in Templeton. The public notice for this hearing included three items: adjust when the fees are paid, discontinue the slow fringe area, and adopt a continuance for the fees. The original intent was to discuss adjusting when the fees were going to be paid and delay the time of payment to the time that the occupancy permit was issued. This item will be brought back to your board by the planning department at a future date. For the discontinuance of the slow fringe area, the fee area was created in 2004 in cooperation with the city of San Luis Obispo. In 2009, the city annexed and removed a substantial portion of the fee area. The remaining fee area is no longer viable. This is a map showing the fee area. The area shaded in gray is the area that was annexed by the city. We recommend that your board direct staff to work with the city on an agreement to apply the existing account balance to the intersection of Tank Farm and 227. And if an agreement cannot be reached, have the account balance transferred to the current property owners for the parcels that paid fees. The other recommended actions: adopt the resolution discontinuing the San Luis Obispo Fringe area, approve the 2010 improvement fee reports, and adopt the resolutions continuing the fees for the other fee areas.
Okay. Are you?
Thank you.
Thank you. Questions from the board? Supervisor Gibson.
Very quickly, Mr. Chairman, if you go back to the North County fees, I just caught one thing that was that caught my eye. In the Templeton area, if you're doing retail in area B or area A, you're paying $4,000 or $5,000. If you're doing retail in area C, where I wouldn't want to do retail, it's $14,000. Whereas the residential numbers have much less variation one to the other. Is there a quick explanation on that?
The area C area doesn't include anything that's zoned residential that hasn't been developed. The residential permits that were being pulled were in agricultural areas. So when we calculated the fee, we calculated one fee per trip based on all trips in the area instead of breaking it out.
So you're saying that, okay, I guess I didn't quite understand that, but that there's no, are you saying there's no retail land in the area C?
Area C has some retail. It's limited. For the most part, it's industrial and ag. And when we were putting together that sub-area, we just assumed that all trips, there was no pass-by, and the internal movement of trips was such that all trips would be leading out of the area.
Okay, and so this is the per peak hour trip fee, whereas in retail in B and C they may have multiple peak hour trips.
Yes.
That would actually make the total cost more like the $14,000.
Yes.
Okay, I got it. And then the other question is, do you have a more precise timing on when the delay of fee payment to occupancy would become before this board? And I would encourage as soon as possible, as I know there are a couple of projects who are interested in that issue.
I believe it is scheduled for March.
Okay. Thank you.
Supervisor Meacham.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We've been talking about this in my office quite a bit and trying to sort this out, so bear with me if you will. I can't quite understand why there's not a standardized road fee across the board. I mean, a road is a road is a road is a road. So why is there such a disparity in cost relative to a road fee?
The different areas have different projects that they're paying for. The areas that have new road construction and freeway interchange projects, those projects tend to be more costlier, and that causes the fee to be higher. In the areas where we're looking at signal projects and some minor road widening, those projects are less costly, and that results in a lower fee.
But wouldn't the signalization be a separate cost item? Typically, there's a fund for that, or fee for that.
There is. Well, it's all added to the CIPs for each area. It's a function of how many millions of dollars we're estimating the improvements to be, divided over the number of available trips. And the more expensive projects are in the Templeton and South County areas where we're looking at modifying freeway interchanges and building new roads.
And we get to the cost relative to the projects. And we've heard over the last year, because of the economy, we've had favorable reports come in on bids. If we've saw a lessening in those dollars in a percentage, why would we not lessen the dollar amount in fees?
The fee pays for the construction of the project right away, project development and environmental costs, and we've seen lower cost estimates for the construction, but the costs for the other phases have been increasing or staying the same, which is why we are recommending continuing the fees for another year and revisiting at that time.
And is there a difference the way you calculate existing businesses, existing buildings versus new construction as far as the fee?
Yes, existing buildings have paid into the program, so as long as there's not a change in the land use or the zoning, we would not be assessing a fee on them. It's when there is a change to a more trip-intense type of development or use that a fee is normally triggered.
Okay, and then just two other quick questions. Could we somehow, addressing the payment plan issue, establish something whereby if a project's not going to come down the road for a while, but yet they know they have fees, could there be something put in place like a monthly payment as opposed to one big lump sum payment right up front to get the things done? Could we, I guess, have something to consider at some point in time? So you don't have to answer that right now, but I'd like to hear more from that regard. And then the other thing is, why could we not provide an incentive for newer expanding businesses? I mean, we do that for affordable housing. Why would we not do that to promote our economy?
Well, the fee program is intended to help offset impacts to the roadway network caused by new development, and those are all capacity-based, so it's to help address congestion and other issues that are caused by that development. So that's why it ends up paying for this and these projects. For continuing maintenance, that's paid through the road fund and other contributions. As far as an incentive for the new development, I'm not sure, and I'd have to come back to you.
Thanks. That's it for now.
Okay.
You can take a stab at that one if you wanted.
Yes. Mr. Honeycutt?
Frank Honeycutt, also with County Public Works. A lot of times people tend to view this fee as a tax and that it could be adjusted up or down or whatever. It's not really. As we indicated, this fee is set up to mitigate traffic impacts or cumulative impacts. So I'm not aware that we have reduced the fee for low-cost or low-income housing. Those projects generate a certain amount of traffic, and we charge a fee based on that. Sometimes they get their funding from other sources.
and that helps defray those costs. But everybody who generates traffic is expected to pay into the fee.
Thank you. Let me open up to the public. I have one request to speak, and it seems like another one's emerging. Lindy Owen. You'll concede, so we'll go with Mr. Greening.
Thank you. I am Eric Greening, and actually, until or unless we fund these roads by raising the gas tax or the vehicle license fee toward where it needs to be, we are not incentivizing the frugal behavior we claim that our strategic growth climate action plan and many other documents tell us we want to be. There is no direct connection between automobile ownership or use and these fees. They are a cost that is imposed on having a roof over your head. And these fees are charged to a building regardless of whether it is a household with zero cars, one car, or six cars. And so, essentially, the existence of these fees represents a failure to live up to our stated goals. Until, and I realize the state is the main actor here, but even locally, for example, five counties in the Bay Area have raised not just sales taxes, but vehicle license fees on a local county basis to take care of transportation needs. I would like to see us get rid of all these fees. Affordability of housing is a critical issue, and we should not be forcing people to subsidize the automobile for the right to have a roof over their heads. We have almost 4,000 homeless people in this county, and it's pretty darn cold at night. And I think it's time to stop coddling the single-occupant driver and put these fees where they ought to be. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Greening. I'm going to close public comment and bring it back to the board for a motion, some action, some way of...
I'll move staff's recommendation.
Okay. Supervisor Gibson, seconded by Supervisor Teixeira. Any further discussion? Okay. Roll call, Madam Clerk.
Mr. Gibson.
Yes.
Mr. Teixeira.
Yes.
Mr. Meacham.
Yes.
Mr. Patterson.
Yes.
Mr. Hill.
Yes. Okay, we have one more item. What's the pleasure of the board and everyone else here? Do we
10 minutes.
Muscle through it and...
I got to take a break.
Okay, let's take a break. Let's take a short break. We'll come back and finish the last item. We'll come back in 10 minutes. Back, and we are coming to our last hearing item, G1. If you would introduce that, Madam Clerk.
Item G1 is consideration of sole source professional services agreement for the Los Osos Wastewater Project with Schindberg, Taylor, McCormick, and Jenker for appraisal services in the amount of $78,300 to Hamner, Jewell and Associates for acquisition services in the amount of $75,000, and 3 Amendment Number 3 to existing agreement with Corolo Engineers for engineering consulting services in the amount of $69,405, 2nd District. Recommend approval and instruct chairperson to sign.
Thank you. Mr. Waddell, with great alacrity, how about giving us this?
Good afternoon, Board of Supervisors and Chairman Hill. I'm John Waddell with the Public Works Department. I have just a brief summary of the recommended actions for you. The first two professional services agreements relate to right-of-way appraisal and acquisition services. both of these firms are local firms and have extensive experience with the county and in Los Osos. They've also, besides the Los Osos Wastewater Project, in the past for the CSD, they've also worked with the county on Willow Road and Nacimiento Water Project, for example. Their expertise and extensive resources are the reason for the sole source recommendation for these for both Schindberger, Taylor, and McCormick, and also for Hamner, Jewell & Associates. They really are the most qualified firms of this type in our county, and have the resources available to meet project timelines. Phil Acosta, our right-of-way agent in our department, is also here in the audience. Can answer specific questions on their on those agreements, but what those entail are separating the appraisal services from then the acquisition negotiations for approximately 9 properties needed for the wastewater project for a whole range of properties, whether it's the treatment plant site for real property, pipeline easements, temporary construction easements, a whole range of property types to complete the needs of the project. And just of note, the CSD had acquired the majority of the properties needed for the collection system as well as their treatment plant site. With the new treatment plant site, as well as some of the other changes required through the project approval and the coastal development permit, predicates the need for acquiring a number of additional properties for the project. On the engineering services amendment, the amendment to the existing contract with Corollo Engineers, that's needed for some specific work tasks related to the pending engineering agreement for design of the collection system, which will be with a separate design firm, not with Corollo, and subject through a request for proposal process. So the scope items for Corollo are assisting with the technical details of the scope for the design. So first of all, Corollo will not be assisting with the selection of a design firm for the collection system, but after a firm is collected, as we hammer out the technical details of everything in the scope, their assistance on that and their expertise is needed. And then also for technical memos, kind of pre-design memos, one is for the recycled water distribution and reuse system. They had previously done a reuse tech memo in 2008, which essentially looked at alternatives for reuse. Now that we have an approved project and a set plan for how to use the recycled water, they're going to update that tech memo to evaluate to look in more detail at those specifics and provide design criteria to allow then the design firm to complete their scope. And also on a similar task is for looking at the SCADA, which is the remotely operated control system for both the treatment plant and the collection system, and those are integrated. And so with the treatment plant now moved out of town, there's going to be some different parameters and requirements, and basically the collection system design is going to have to be coordinated with the treatment facility design that's going to come in the future. So Corollo Engineers will set up the standards that both the collection system designer and the treatment facility designer can then use, but those need to be set ahead of time. So that's, and then also some scope in there for additional participation in project planning efforts as the owner's rep. So these agreements and amendments are within our current project budget. The sole source recommendation for the right-of-way services, the appraisal and acquisition, are necessary to meet the project timelines, and these are the most qualified firms available locally. And then the Corollo tasks are specifically necessary for preparing for the upcoming collection system design. With that, concludes my brief update, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Waddell. Supervisor Meacham.
Just quickly, John, is there I am familiar with the first two, all three organizations, but on the NASA Mano project, we had some cost overruns with these folks. Is this a cost not to exceed? Is this a hard cost here, or do we anticipate anything in overruns here?
These costs on the appraisal services are time and materials, so this is a cost estimate. It's a not to exceed cost unless under this agreement. So anything that was unforeseen would have to come back to your board.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. All right, seeing no further questions from the board, I'll go to the public, and I would ask that you focus your comments specifically on this item, these contracts, and we'll begin with Gwen Taylor and then go to Piper Riley.
Good Good afternoon. My name is Gwen Taylor, and I'm a resident of Los Osos in the Prohibition Zone. So, therefore, we do have a dog in this fight. One of the things that bothers me is the extreme amounts of funding on all three of these projects. I should say contracts. And one of them being the fact that November 19th, 2010, is when discussions apparently began. You have a copy of the letter. Apparently began with the acquisition contract. And this is unusual insofar as, did you know that you were going to approve these funds before? Or did the Public Works and supervisor for the district take it upon himself to contact this group and get them to make a commitment, whether it be verbal or whether it be written, that they may get the project? Not only that, but the nine properties or right-of-ways that are going to be acquired or proposed for acquisition, since they've already been discussed with through the CSD, why are they going forth with a project and persons who have already told the CSD whether they will or will not sell or allow for right-of-ways to be placed on their properties? There is a project proposed on one piece of property that the CSD was told right out they would not sell the property for anything to do with the sewer project. That having been said, on page G130, task decisions, upon receipt of a funding commitment from USDA upon commitment from USDA, the county has until August the 31st, 2011, to award a contract for construction of the collection system. Between now and then, the county must procure a collection system design, engineer, and address numerous presentations. The point I'm trying to make to you is, are you fast-tracking things to the point where you're not getting the best for the community, the best for the county? Fast-tracking is not the way to go for this project. We've seen it in the past. We know what can happen. We don't want a repeat of having to go back and find that the process is being fast-tracked to the point of destruction. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Taylor. Ms. Riley, followed by Lindy Owen.
Good afternoon, Board. I am Piper Riley from Los Osos. Today, your board is being asked for more money again. The current Los Osos project is basically the Montgomery Watson project that failed in 2005. And like Morro Bay, we are being forced into building an obsolete and ill-placed MWH wastewater plant. Neither project really followed CEQA, in that no real reasonable alternatives were evaluated. The Coastal Commission has trashed the Morro Bay project, and Peter Douglas referred to the Los Osos project as a train wreck. Yet it looks like both projects will continue to move forward. Why? Because MWH is involved. This county loves its sole sourcing, which is what you're asking for today. More money for your sole sourced companies. These are your staff's own words. Then there's the issue of the Carollo contract amendment, which is really just a change order with no ceilings on costs. This should not be an amendment. This should be an opening of a work order through a request for proposal to other firms to create competition as opposed to sole sourcing and adding on endless costs. We are paying for work that has already been done and stamped by Lou Carollo of Carollo, who picked MWH. More sole sourcing, and Paavo Ogren violated design-build contracting statutes by blaming the USDA for not allowing it, which is not true. The LOWWP selection process was rigged, and funding was creatively applied for. It is well documented, and this has paved the way for MWH to be selected for both short lists. It does appear that the proposed contract has Lou Carollo in charge of selecting the firm to correct the misinformation in the tech memos. I hope that this is not the case. Remember all the misinformation we have so frequently spoken about before this board? which was necessary to get the permits and tip the scales on alternatives analysis. Now, drafting update specs means you need to be factual, like the greenhouse gas debacle, among other highly questionable issues such as the flows, soil disturbance, costs, etc. This project exemplifies taxpayer waste at the environment's expense. Saltwater intrusion is eating away at our drinking water supply as sole source buddies tweak and mark up already purchased design documents. This is more in a long line of sole sourcing, belly up to the trough, maneuvers by Paavo Ogren. Please do not approve this without further serious investigation. And in closing, gravity sewers need far more upkeep and are far more volatile than low-pressure systems. And had your board not permitted above-ground and low-lying septic tanks, there would be no supposed leakage, which you still have never proven in Los Osos. Thank you.
Before I go on, I just want to make a couple of comments. Since you brought up the misinformation, I thought it was important, since you seem to be trafficking in misinformation in most of your comments. It is not, the board is not being asked to agree to a budget, their budget addition adjustment that was already approved on October 5th. This is just a contract agreement. You cite Mr. Douglas, the executive director of the Coastal Commission, a comment that he made subsequently after that comment. He and his staff approved, recommended that the project go forward without issues. When it did raise some issues at the commission, it eventually did receive its coastal development permit. Citing that comment is misinformation.
Douglas was suffering of cancer at the time. He was not there when his staff made those comments, and his staff made comments before all of the documentation was received.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Riley. Ms. Owen, followed by Mr. Margaretson.
Lindy Owen from Los Osos. I will add that the project was not just approved, you said, with no problems. It has many conditions, and we have no idea what the cost on those conditions is going to be, which is we've asked in the, we keep being told that it's $184 million, $189 million. You're asking us to just approve another quarter of a million for studies that are duplications. I'll show you. Please go to G112, page 12 at the bottom. The I can't pronounce her name either, Schoenberger, Taylor, McCormick, and Jecker. They state there that they had previously completed an appraisal of parcel 3, I believe, at Sea Pines within the prior 3 years. So we're with this contract, you're agreeing for another 6 hours to redo it. That comes out at $1,800 an hour, comes out to $10,800 to redo something. We just heard that the staging area properties, that's redundant too. That was already arranged before. This is just updating stuff. I do not understand how anybody could be asking $78,000 to do this. This is duplication of work that has already been done. And when you're upgrading things, it doesn't take as if it was all started over again. This project has been paid for probably four times over because people keep pasting and copying the prior studies. That's why it's such a mess, because it never seems to... there's nothing fresh about this project anymore. It's got the same flaws it had in the beginning, and they've been duplicated, and it continues to be duplicated. I would like to know also why you spend so much money. These things are part of the project. You haven't taken the project. You just keep allowing more of our funds, our debt, to be used to fund these types of things that definitely are not part of the project. They will be coming later. Once you accept the project, we might have a different way of looking at this. The recycled water, 2008, that's just another update too. They're not doing anything new. So I would urge you to definitely, this sole sourcing is just not acceptable. I think that what other speakers have said is true. We can't afford this project to start with, and when you start letting people get paid three and four times for the same work, it's just not very productive, and it's costing us more and more money. We would have actually had a system that was what was supposed to be was design-build if we hadn't had Carollo and associates step in and undo the design-build process, which leaves us no alternative except for a leaky, stinky gravity sewer.
Thank you, Ms. Owen. Mr. Margetson.
With respect to misinformation, let's be clear. The Coastal Commission did not approve the project as it was submitted from the county. There were many changes made to it. If you remember, the original project that the county put forth was spray fields at Tanini. And that's not even closely what the new project is. And because of some changes that happened at the Board of Supervisors, when you guys had it in front of you, the Coastal Commission appealed the project themselves to commissioners because wording was changed by supervisor, by a certain supervisor. So, you know, the blame game starts from the county level up. To say that the Coastal Commission approved the project, yes, they did. They didn't prove it directly the way it came from the county to them. And the number of those conditions were because of what they added, because of the mistakes that were done at this level. My concern about this issue is the same concern I brought up during public comment. We were under the understanding on the rates and charges ordinance that this was done in-house, that this was done locally. You outsource that contract to another state. That was a sole source contract. Done in October to fast-track this project so there'd be as little input as possible before you put it on consent calendar, to put it on calendar for you to approve an ordinance with very little input before the fact. You had a town hall meeting after the fact it was put out on consent calendar and it was shoved through. An incorrect ordinance. That is going to come back on you. Just time will tell. But is this now the standard for the rest of this project, the rest of this year, because you have to get to a deadline at the end of August, that everything from now on is going to be sole source because you have to meet timelines? Now all of a sudden we're concerned about timelines. We haven't been concerned about timelines for 4 years because when the public brought things to your attention that slowed the progress of this project down, we were put off, chastised, and told we didn't know what we were talking about. Perfect example. The original project from this board had the word valley in it for disposal instead of basin. Did that get changed? And did that get changed at the Coastal Commission level?
I'm waiting to hear relevance here, Mr. Chairman.
My relevance is I want to know if sole sourcing is the only way you're going to get this project done. And these cannot be the only ones that are qualified in this county to do this work.
That concludes public comment. To bring it back to the board, does staff have any follow-up? Mr. Ogren or Mr. Waddell?
Chairman Hill, members of the board, Pavel Ogren, Public Works Director. There are certainly many examples through the course of normal conduct of county business that sole sourcing recommendations are made to your board. We in Public Works as well as staff throughout the county always look at those issues very seriously. In this particular case, I think it's well founded that the right-of-way firms are, you know, we have very limited local firms that can provide these services, and this firm has provided us services on many occasions and well qualified. On the Corollo contract, they have been our project engineers for the last 4 years, and it is very common once we have an engineering firm engaged to be able to continue to utilize the historic knowledge that they've developed. And certainly changing your basic project engineering team at this point in time, yes, it would create delay issues. It would also create cost issues of having another support, you know, firm come in and help us out. Corollo did do fine screening and the other engineering reports early on, so this is a logical extension of the role that they've already filled and continue to fill for the project. And thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Ogren. Supervisor Meacham?
I just have a quick question, and this is regarding Lindy Owen's comments relative to duplication of efforts in these contracts. Mm-hmm. What have we done to date that Can you respond to that somewhat? Because I'm curious about that.
Yeah, I certainly can. I think that she was making specific reference to the work of Scherenberger, the appraisal, and our right-of-way agent can get into more detail. A couple of things there is they did an appraisal of the property for different financial purposes and not for the purposes of what we need them to do. And as we know, when you hire an appraiser, the appraiser's statement says, I am doing it for this purpose, and they're very clear that 3 years ago that was a different purpose. But even if, you know, appraisal, we also know, even if you did it for the same purpose today, valuations have changed in the last 3 years. You know, I've had my house reappraised in the last 5 years twice because I refinanced last year and I refinanced, you know, 5 or 6 years ago. Time changes values. And so, you know, again, the difference in approach on the appraisals is important, but just the lapsing of times requires. In a general sense, no, we're not redoing any work. As we go along the work product, we always then have to go to the additional level of detail. The Corollo's work right now that's being recommended is the assistance that, the substance of it is the assistance that we need from them. Once we go through the RFP process and we make recommendations on who's going to finish the design on the collection system, we need Corollo to help us negotiate the final engineering tasks and some of those other technical details. We need them to be our engineering representative on the project, where their fee on this particular contract amendment is $60,000. And I would anticipate that as we go forward in the project, we would be proposing other specific contract amendments. Those dollar amounts are still relatively pale in comparison, you know, to the design engineer who's going to be doing the substance of most of the work, and then ultimately the construction contractors who, you know, we pay 80% of the project to the contractors. So we do continue to need Corolla on engineering assistance. The best way of portraying it is we're not redoing work. We're getting into that additional level of detail. Ultimately, even during a construction project, we'll look back to the design engineers on what we call requests for information, because the contractors come back and they say, okay, we read the design and everything, but there's a detail here we don't quite understand, so we have an RFI, and sometimes, you know, you have modifications to designs as you go also, and those result in change orders. So this is a normal evolution of going from, you know, the broader engineering analysis into the EIRs, into the permits, and now starting to get into the details of the design efforts.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. Supervisor Gibson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Appreciate staff's response on the issues raised in public comment. With that, I'll move staff's recommendation.
Second. Okay. We have a motion by Supervisor Gibson, second by Supervisor Patterson. Roll call.
Mr. Gibson.
Yes.
Mr. Patterson.
Yeah.
Mr. Meacham.
With a clear understanding, this is the money that's been allocated in the prior budget adjustment. We're not adjusting anything further. Yes.
Mr. Teixeira.
Yes.
Mr. Hill.
Yes. Okay, we are going to go into closed session. Have no request from the public to speak on that. So, Mr. Jensen?
Warren Jensen, County Council, about 20 or 30 minutes.
Okay. Thank you. We'll return to report out of closed session, but we won't need AGP. You can send them home.
Okay.
Thank you.